It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client!
Mama Monster!
Conquered the street!
You like fighting a woman?
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Come over here and fight me!
Delete! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Welcome to episode 593 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off, a rare Thursday sound off here for April 4th, 2019. I am the Solid Monster. I am officially on vacation as we prepare for WrestleMania weekend and the flurry of events that are going to be happening over the next several days. Everybody is descending upon New York City. A lot of people flying in, I know, for the WrestleMania show, for the Madison Square Garden show, and all the other events happening this weekend. And I'm actually, as I'm sitting here, it's about a quarter after 10 here on Thursday morning, and about 90 minutes from now, there is a press conference that is taking place at Madison Square Garden with the AAA promotion out of Mexico. And the belief is that they are going to be announcing their debut date at the Garden. They're going to be running the Garden later on this fall. As I'm recording this, before I'm finished, this press conference may well be over, and I'll break in with any kind of update if there is one. But I'm sure that's exactly what this is for. They're going to announce their first date at the Garden. They're going to have a whole bunch of talent there. Conan is going to be there, I think, Pentagon, among others. So, like I said, we'll get an update here later on if they announce anything at that press conference. So that's sort of the first big thing that's happening this morning. Now, let me just let everybody know, as far as the recording plan for the rest of the weekend, because there's just so many different things going on, we couldn't get the gang together for our usual annual WrestleMania roundtable, which is always fun to do, and I'm going to see those guys tomorrow. We're going to be going to the NXT show, but we just couldn't find time to get everybody together for a roundtable, so you got me. You got to live with me, I'm sorry. As far as the NXT show, the MSG show, which is on Saturday, I don't know when the reviews will be up. I'll be at both shows. I don't know when I'll have time to actually get the review recorded and up. It probably won't be until sometime after WrestleMania. And the first, most important thing on Monday morning is going to be the WrestleMania review. So I would hope at some point, if not Monday, then by Tuesday or Wednesday at the latest. So it's going to be a few days. This will be taking the place of the usual Sunday show. So there will not be a normal Sunday morning upload. I will be getting ready to head out to the stadium. So this is the show for this week. And so hopefully that answers all of your questions there. Tomorrow, Friday, 2 p.m., we're going to be at the King's Beer Hall, a few blocks away from the Barclays Center for our big Sound Off the Wagon meetup. This is the big WrestleMania weekend meetup for all of the Sound Off listeners. We've got a great response so far to the invite on Facebook, and not everybody is even on Facebook. Some people even deleted their Facebook, but have emailed me and said they plan on stopping by. So the turnout should be pretty damn good. I don't know that we'll get everybody there at once, but hopefully at the peak of whatever it is, where we have as many people there as I think we're going to have, we'll get a big photo op going. I usually like to try to get that done. But all told, I'm expecting well over 100 people, so I look forward to seeing everybody there. I'll be there from about 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. At around 6 is when things will start to break apart. And whoever's going to the NXT show can walk over to the Barclays Center. Kids are allowed, just in case you're wondering, if you're coming in with your family or your kids. Kids are allowed up until 6 p.m. So you can bring them on by. It's not 21 and over. And also don't forget, I've been mentioning it a couple times over the last few weeks, but the Wrestling Soup Boys are hosting their own live podcast. They're having their own event on Saturday night at midnight, so I guess technically Sunday morning, at the Lucky 13 Saloon in Brooklyn. So and I believe that's only a few blocks away from where the Barclays Center is. So if you're going to the WWE Hall of Fame, you only have to walk, I think, 3 or 4 blocks to get to Lucky 13. So go support those guys. I may try to stop by myself, so that should be a lot of fun as well. If you're traveling around the area, use our Lyft code. You can get a few bucks off your first ride if you sign up for a new account. Could be $5, could be $10, whatever it is. I mean, who doesn't want to get money off their friggin' ride? So just use the promo code SOLOMONSTER. That probably will come in handy for a lot of you this weekend. There's a pro wrestling tee sale going on right now. Some of you have already bought t-shirts. You can get 20% off all shirts in our Sound Off store now through Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Just use the code MANIA at checkout. ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff. You guys know the drill with Audible. I don't have to keep beating a dead horse here. AudibleTrial.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff. Get yourself a free book. And thank you to everybody who's made a PayPal donation so far early here this week, since the show's going up a little early. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. The Portland pop star, Paul Hamilton, you are a crazy man, my friend. Absolutely out of your mind, but thank you. I appreciate that. Chuck Lunatic Lentz, he's another one. Chuck is the man. He is a lunatic, but Chuck is the man. He's good people, so thank you to him. John Loose Cannon Lopez, his birthday. Loose Cannon's birthday falls on WrestleMania Sunday, so join me in wishing him a very happy birthday. Thank you also to Deadpool, James Herrera, Pull No Punches, Alan Ragasa, the Florida Freebird, Brian Becerra. We have Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, Recon, Russell Bulware, Mixmaster, Manny Juddy, Wildcat, Wasib Akhtar, Kill Him With Kindness, or just Kill Him, Kerry Perry. It's kind of a long name, but I like it. Defined Real, thank you to him as well. The Hollywood Heel, Brian Roberts, he turns the big 3-0 on Saturday, so happy birthday, my friend. 30 is the new 20, which sucks because that means you're not of drinking age yet, but have fun anyway. Alex is another one, big supporter of the show. Happy birthday to Alex. He'll be at the NXT show tomorrow night. You know, I can only think of one better way to spend your birthday, if not at an NXT show, and I'll let you figure out what that is. Steven Chapa, thank you for the very nice review on iTunes. I wish you were coming to the meetup tomorrow. Maybe you will be. WrestleRumble.com. WrestleRumble.com. They're good friends of the podcast as well. They are hosting their annual Mania Pick'em contest. You can win up to $1,000 cold hard cash. $1,000. That's the top prize this year. Second and third place winners will each receive $100. Fourth and fifth place get $50 each. The best part is it's only $10 to enter. A single entry is only $10. Just go to WrestleRumble.com anytime now, up until WrestleMania Sunday, up until 6:45 p.m., right before the main card begins. You can enter. And you may get questions like, how many suplexes will Brock Lesnar throw in his match? Or, you know, will the Miz's dad enter the ring at any point during the match? You get all these questions that you can try to guess the answer to. And if you're smart enough, you can win $1,000. So go to WrestleRumble.com. Lastly here, one last mention, and we'll get down to business here, because we're going to be doing WrestleMania predictions. I've got a lot of thoughts about the John Oliver piece from HBO the other night. A lot of you wanted me to talk about that. And it is the number one reveal in our WrestleMania match countdown, the most shocking WrestleMania match outcomes. This is it. This countdown's been going on for 10 weeks now. It's all built up to this moment. And I will reveal the number one most shocking WrestleMania match outcome at the end of the show. But again, one last thing here to mention. Steve is a longtime listener of the show. His cousin Jen runs an annual fundraiser to help fight multiple sclerosis. This is the fourth year in a row that she is doing this. There's a fundraiser taking place at the Bean Post Pub on Fifth Avenue in Brooklyn on Saturday, May 18th. At 7 p.m. to benefit the National MS Society. They're going to be raffling off prizes, including a 55-inch TV, 4K no less, 4K TV. You can join the private Facebook group and get your tickets. The name of the group to search for is Dirty Little Muckers. Also, Muckfest is a very muddy 5K obstacle course hosted by the National MS Society. If you go to muckfest.com, search under teams for Dirty Little Muckers. Their team page will come up and you can make a donation. Jen has helped raise almost $30,000 since the first mud run in 2015. So congrats to her on that. And anything you can do, every little bit helps. Before I get to WrestleMania, which is probably going to take 5,000 years here to get through all these predictions, I want to take a moment to mention House of Glory. The promotion is hosting its Culture Clash 19 event on Saturday at 2 p.m. at the NYC Arena In Jamaica, Queens. It's featuring the great Muda, Tajiri, Pentagon. This is a loaded show at 2 p.m. on Saturday. But this company and its school was founded by the Amazing Red, which is a name that I'm sure many of you know, or many of you maybe just remember from TNA. Wherever you know him from, you've heard of the Amazing Red. Red also wrestles for House of Glory. He teaches at the school. He's sort of the jack of all trades there. And this week, he announced his retirement from the ring. Apparently, this has been building for a while, but to a lot of people, this was very sudden. I know for me, this came out of nowhere. He announced his retirement in a video on YouTube. It is legit. It is not a work. It is not part of an angle or a storyline. He canceled all of his WrestleMania weekend bookings. This is something that was a long time coming. Physically, he's banged up. He's hurting. And after more than 20 years in the ring, his body can take no more, and so he has decided to step away. I hope he hasn't stepped away because he got some kind of terrible diagnosis of some major injury, and my sense is it's just an accumulation and a buildup of a lot of injuries and a lot of wear and tear over the years. Now, he's going to continue to run the Hog School in Queens, so he will continue to teach, but he will no longer be an active performer. And here's a guy, you know, he's influenced a lot of people in the wrestling business. You can tell by this huge outpouring of tweets and messages on social media from people all over wrestling. You know, veteran wrestlers, people on the current WWE roster, independent wrestlers have chimed in to talk about what an influence this guy has been on them and what an influence he's been on the business as a whole. You know, in each of the last few years, WWE has even posted videos on its YouTube channel of Sasha Banks going back to or going to the HOG school to train with Red ahead of some of her biggest matches. You know, she needed a ring to train in, and she looked up Red, and the rest is history. It's not that he trained her, you know, bringing her into the business, but she needed a ring. She learned about the school. She heard about him, and that was it. And she went, and she worked with him, and before her NXT match with Bayley in Brooklyn, that's how far back it goes when she first discovered the school over there. She was in town, and she headed over there. Now, she went back there again before her SummerSlam match with Alexa Bliss. She went back there again before her Royal Rumble match this year against Ronda Rousey. You know, so Red is just, he's the one that you go to, you know, learn the ropes and train and prepare, and he can give you great advice, and that's really what he has become known for. And obviously when he wrestled, you know, he had a very high-flying, very high-impact style, very innovative in a lot of ways. You know, the guy wrestled for 20 years. He made his debut during the Attitude Era. You know, that's how far back he goes. But there's a reason that somebody like a Sasha Banks would want to go and learn from somebody like him and train with somebody like him. Now, my first time at the House of Glory School, this was last year, before the first event, I did a little bit of commentary for them. And I was doing some pre-show stuff, you know, with JD for their big high-intensity event back in August. So I went to the school earlier that week, and I went to the, you know, they have an office in the back, and I went back there, and I was meeting with somebody. And Red was busy. Yeah, I didn't want to bother him. He was training at the time, his students in the ring. But I'm in the back, and he comes to the back, and that's where I met him for the first time. And he ducked into, I think it was the bathroom or something, he ducked into the bathroom. So meanwhile, I'm talking to somebody else, and I think somebody joked, maybe made a joke about me getting into the ring. And I said, you know, what are you, out of your mind? You know, I'm too small for these guys. What do you want me to do? And then I hear this voice, and because of the bathroom, I hear this voice, because he had overheard the entire conversation, just say, yeah, I know the feeling. And it was just one of those little kind of icebreakers there, because, yeah, I'd been a little nervous about the whole thing. And after that, it was just, you know, it was smooth sailing. He's been cool to me the few times I've interacted with him. I've been to several shows now. They've all, really all of them, they've all been good to me. I'll be there again on Saturday. I'm looking forward to that. So to Red, I think it's too bad he didn't get to check off all the boxes on his list of, you know, he said he had a list of opponents he wanted to wrestle, and unfortunately he didn't get to fulfill that entire list before he retired. It may not be completely on the terms that he wanted, but he's made his mark, and he's still making his mark, teaching his students, and I wish him nothing but the best. He's a quality human being. WrestleMania 35 is this Sunday from MetLife Stadium in the shadow of New York City. I'm sure all those New Jersey natives love hearing that on television every week. You know, when you guys fill out forms online, do you have to write in, you know, when they have you write in your city and state, do you just write in that you live in the shadow of New York City? Because I think that's what WWE thinks. So maybe you just kind of write in, you know, shadow, comma, NYC. This is going to be my eighth straight WrestleMania live and in person. And I will say there have been some really good WrestleManias. There have been some really terrible WrestleManias. But if you've never been to one live, especially in the stadium setting, it is an experience I feel like you should have at least once. I mean, as these shows get longer and longer, it may not be as appealing. But I remember the last time they were at MetLife, they had this great stage set up with the Brooklyn Bridge, and they had the Statue of Liberty on top of the canopy above the ring. From what I understand, without giving away any real major spoilers here, the set this year kind of reminds people of the, I think, of the New York City cityscape. Beyond that, I have no idea. I haven't seen any photos or anything. But it really is, to be there live, WrestleMania 33, I still say, is the greatest set, stage setup they've had for any show ever in their history. Apparently, they had pumped $5 million into that setup in Orlando a few years ago, and it was, you could tell. I mean, it was just, it was gorgeous. And to be there live and see it in person is just, it's kind of awe-inspiring, some of these designs they come up with. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what they come up with concept-wise for the stage setup this year. As far as the weather update goes, right now, last I checked, it's supposed to be a dry 64 degrees during the day with a low of 49. So it's going to get colder as the show goes on. But as long as it doesn't rain, it shouldn't be too bad. So if you are coming in, if you're not from the area, you don't know what to wear, probably makes sense to wear a jacket, wear a hoodie, wear something, because you may pay the price for it as the night goes on. Just take my word for it. Brutus the Barber Beefcake was confirmed this week as the final Hall of Fame inductee for the class of 2019. I assume he'll be inducted by Hulk Hogan. There was no mention of that made. Some of the legacy names, some of the legacy inductees have also leaked. This is from WrestleVotes on Twitter. Some of those names, not all of them, some of them include Wahoo McDaniel, Jim Barnett, Playboy Buddy Rose, and Luna Vachon. Now, you can make a case for all of those guys deserving their own separate inductions into the Hall of Fame, video package treatment, and the whole nine yards. But Luna's the one that kind of bothered me, because I heard Luna Vachon, I mean, it's nice that they're honoring her, but if any of them, you know, really deserve, I think, their own standalone induction, I mean, like I said, they all do, but Luna should get her own induction. So the fact that they're just sort of lumping her in there, and they'll just stick her name on a shirt, or just, you know, kind of stick her name on the official program, and hey, Luna Vachon's a Hall of Famer, I think is a little hollow. So that kind of sucks. But anyway, those are the names so far. Now, as far as WrestleMania goes, 5 p.m. start time for the kickoff show, 7 p.m. for the main card, going all the way until 3 o'clock in the morning, it looks like. I kid, but not by much. And no, you know what? It's no exaggeration for our UK listeners. Yeah, I'm sure the UK people are listening to me right now going, oh, you have no idea. It's true. I mean, really, this is nothing compared to what they have to go through. The pre-show for them doesn't start until 10 p.m. The main card starts at midnight. And who knows how long that's going to go. That's brutal. I sympathize with them. That is brutal. Now, for as bloated as this WrestleMania card is, and I don't even have the final tally written in front of me of what the current match count is up to. It's got to be 16 or 17. By the time the show goes on the air, it could be 20. But for as bloated as this card is, there is no Dean Ambrose. Ambrose came out after Raw went off the air Monday night to beat up Baron Corbin, and then he took a final bow in front of the crowd in D.C. Happy trails to Dean Ambrose. I said it last week. All these people who just were crowing about, oh, it's all a work, you're all being worked. Boy, they're awfully silent now. Boy, are they silent. And Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens just came back, and he challenged Daniel Bryan for the WWE title at Fastlane, and He had his WrestleMania plans upended when Kofi Kingston caught fire. It was supposed to be Owens challenging Bryan for the championship originally at WrestleMania. I'll talk about what I would do with Kevin Owens here in a minute. Alexa Bliss is the host of WrestleMania. Elias is the official musical headliner for WrestleMania. I'm sure he'll be interrupted by somebody. John Cena, I would say, has to be the leading candidate right now. I hope not. I just think that would be lame. We've already seen an interaction between them at WrestleMania. The Undertaker, I suppose, is also a possibility. I'll throw another name in there that I haven't seen mentioned, but I think would be kind of cool, and that's The Rock. I'll throw The Rock's name in there as a dark horse. Rock interrupting Elias as a surprise for an impromptu Rock concert at WrestleMania. I think that could be fun. But whatever John Cena is doing, it's being kept very close to the vest. So grab a drink, or seven or eight, because this may take a while. Let's run down the WrestleMania card, and I'll give my predictions and thoughts as we go along here. We have three kickoff matches announced. The Women's Battle Royal, which I will keep saying it until they do it, should be rechristened as the Sensational Invitational, as a tribute to Sherry Martel. The current rundown of participants includes Asuka, Carmella, Naomi, Mandy Rose, Sonya Deville, Lana, Nikki Cross, Dana Brooke, Ruby Riott, Sarah Logan, Liv Morgan, Mickey James, and Zelina Vega. I would have to think there'll be some NXT or maybe even NXT UK names in there. Maybe a Toni Storm, maybe a Rhea Ripley, although I think she's nursing an injury right now. I would have to expect there'll be some NXT names thrown in there as well. And even though she has not formally been announced for this match, her name is not on the list, I think Lacey Evans enters the match. She doesn't just sashay her way down to the ring, which, by the way, it would take her an awfully long time here, however long this ramp is going to be, to walk all the way down to the ring just to turn around and walk right to the back. I think this time she gets into the ring, and I think that Lacey Evans tosses out Asuka to win this battle royal. When I said this on Twitter a week ago, people skewered me and said, don't give them ideas. You don't think they already have this idea? You don't think they would do this already on their own? Believe me, I don't have to give them any horrible ideas. They've got enough horrible ideas themselves. On SmackDown Tuesday night, they had EC3, Mandy, Sonya, Andrade, Zelina Vega, Lana, Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows, and Shelton Benjamin against Nikki Cross, Heavy Machinery, Naomi, The Hardys, R-Truth, Carmella, and Asuka in what they billed as the largest mixed tag team match in history, which degenerated into a giant battle royal, a mixed battle royal. They should have just combined these two battle royals and had a mixed battle royal at WrestleMania. But it degenerated into this mixed battle royal that ended with Asuka throwing Jeff Hardy out of the ring. So for everybody watching and saying, oh, poor EC3, first of all, you're right. But I also want to use this as a word of caution for another Impact talent who is rumored to have interest from WWE, and that is Eli Drake. Eli Drake used to be, you know, the former Sean Ricker. He was on The Rock. The Rock had a reality show on TNT many years ago. It might have been that show, The Hero. I don't remember. But anyway, he was signed to a WWE developmental deal. He also, little trivia note, happens to be the last man ever to be managed by the late Paul Bearer. And so, yeah, charismatic guy, good look, he's in good shape, he got signed to developmental. There were supposedly some issues where they were unhappy with his tweets or his things he was doing on social media, and so they let him go. They let him go. And he landed in Impact Wrestling as Eli Drake and got a nice push. I think he might have had a title run. I haven't been following his run there as closely, but I remember talking about him years ago and saying, here's a guy to watch out for. You know, from what I saw of him, championship wrestling from Hollywood when he was still there many years ago, very charismatic guy, he can talk. He had all the tools, I thought, to become a really big star. And then all that stuff happened where they let him go. But he has batted down those rumors and reports this week about WWE, you know, signing him or wanting to sign him. He says he talks to people there. He stays in touch with friends and coaches, but nobody has actually made him an offer. So it wasn't like a full-throated, hey, this is bullshit, it's false, or I have no interest, Impact's been a great home for me. It was more him just saying, yeah, I if anybody's had conversations with WWE, it hasn't been me, but yeah, I talk to people there, sure, but nobody's come to me with an offer. Let me just say this. If they actually do make him an offer, run like hell. Because like EC3, he too spent time in developmental. He left, right? He got released. Went somewhere else. Went to Impact specifically. And like EC3, made himself a star in another company. And look what they've done to EC3 since promoting him back up to the main roster. I say back up to the main roster. He wasn't really on the main roster to begin with. But look what they've done with him since they put him on television. It's like they're punishing him for getting over somewhere else. Either that, or Vince McMahon looks at him and goes, hey, what's Derek Bateman doing back? We'll have him staring in a mirror backstage every week, and then when we have him on television, he'll be standing shoulder to shoulder with The Ascension and Tyler Breeze and Titus O'Neil. Oh, that's a great crew for him to be part of. Yeah, let that be a lesson for Eli Drake and anybody else in a similar position thinking of coming back to WWE. So anyway, Lacey Evans is my pick to win the... I don't know how I got off the Women's Battle Royal with that, but Lacey is my pick to win the Women's Battle Royal. Also on the kickoff show, we have the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal with Braun Strowman, Colin Jost and Michael Che from SNL, the Hardy Boys, Andrade Cien Almas, Mustafa Ali, EC3, Shelton Benjamin, Apollo Crews, Titus O'Neil, Tyler Breeze, No Way Jose, Bobby Roode, Chad Gable, Anderson and Gallows, Heavy Machinery, The Lucha House Party, The B-Team, The Ascension, Heath Slater, and Rhino. I said earlier, Kevin Owens has no match at WrestleMania. My idea would be to add him to the Battle Royal, even if only as a late entry. And after Braun Strowman takes care of the two SNL goofs, or I figure, you know, I could see Jost, he's the heel, right? He'll eliminate Michael Che. And as he's gloating and as he's celebrating, Braun catches him and dumps him out of the ring. But then have Kevin Owens eliminate Braun Strowman to win. As sweet revenge for all of the torture that Braun made him suffer through last year. All of the awful things that Braun Strowman did to this poor bastard. This could be Kevin Owens' great moment of redemption here. And I know that, you know, they usually have the memory of a lobotomized frog when it comes to storyline continuity like that. I know I make far too much sense with some of these ideas, but I think that would be a nice little callback, and it would be, look, it would be a big win at WrestleMania for Kevin Owens instead of him being in the back at, sitting in catering. You know, Josh emailed me. He said he went back and he listened to episode 384 of the podcast. This would have been around May of 2015. Kevin Owens had just debuted on the main roster, but he was still the NXT champion. And one of the things that he said that I said at the time was, and I liked that Owens had multiple feuds ongoing all at once. Sami Zayn, Finn Balor, Samoa Joe, John Cena. He had beef with all of them. It was KO against the world. And here he is now. I know he just came back, but he's a man without a role. He's a man without any kind of a direction. And I miss those days, you know, when he had three or four different people that he could, you know, beef with all at once. And I think they could be doing the same thing with others as well, not just Kevin Owens. It doesn't always have to just be the one-on-one kind of formula. But to keep things interesting. But it's just striking to see what he was doing then and what he's doing now. You know, Kofi took what would have been his spot at WrestleMania. I hope that coming out of WrestleMania, they've got some kind of a plan for this guy. I'm still not convinced he should be a babyface. He's a natural-born heel. I think for a few weeks or even a couple of months, fine, but he needs to get back to what he does best. And what he does best is just that snarky heel Kevin Owens who just insults everybody, doesn't give a shit. Doesn't give a shit if the fans cheer for him or not. And that's the Kevin Owens that I think is most entertaining, and hopefully they get back to that very soon. So my two picks for the Battle Royals aren't even officially announced for either match. I'm taking a risk, I guess, there, but those are my picks. The final kickoff match is Buddy Murphy defending his Cruiserweight title against Tony Nese. They've had a friendship and an alliance on 205 Live now for many, many months. Tony Nese just won the Cruiserweight tournament to earn the right to challenge for the championship at WrestleMania, and Buddy Murphy didn't take too kindly to that. He found that to be a betrayal. He turned on Tony Nese, who I guess is now a babyface going into this match. Nese, I think, is a New York native, so kind of a hometown guy. And I'm going to go with Tony Nese here. I think Tony Nese wins the Cruiserweight Championship, and I'd like to see that as much for getting Murphy off of 205 Live as anything else. Because what else is there for him to do? He got a big win in Australia back in the fall. He's had a nice run since, I think, October with this title. We've seen Mustafa Ali make the transition from 205 Live to the main roster. He's a hell of an athlete. He belongs on the main roster. You don't even have to like Mustafa Ali or think he should be wrestling for the WWE title, but you have to admit, he's a talented guy. He has a place on the main roster. If he has a place on the main roster, there's no reason Buddy Murphy shouldn't either. And we're heading into this international shakeup. He needs to be part of that, and he needs to end up on Raw or SmackDown in the next few weeks when they have that big shakeup on TV. Now, I think, is the right time to get the belt off of him. So I'm picking Tony Nese. They are teasing, as we now, I guess, talk about the main card here, they are teasing a Raw Tag Team title match. Last I checked, this has not yet been officially announced, but there was a backstage segment. They put it up on YouTube, teasing the Revival, defending their Raw Tag Team titles against the hometown boys, Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins. I say hometown. Ryder is from Long Island, and Hawkins is from Queens. But remember, we're in the shadow of New York City. So this is their hometown as much as anybody else's hometown. So it's not official, but if it happens, first of all, it's a totally thrown together match. It's weird because on TV for weeks now, we've seen Aleister Black and Ricochet wrestling Dash and Dawson. They beat the champions twice in two different non-title matches. On Monday night, they had a title match. They lost by countout. It would make sense to have a title match here with Black and Ricochet winning after, I'm sure, losing to the War Raiders at the NXT show on Friday night. So instead, they put Black and Ricochet in the SmackDown Tag Team title match. And they stick these two, potentially, in the Raw Tag Team title match with no build whatsoever. Ryder and Hawkins, they got some TV time. This is months ago. They were giving them a little bit of TV time. They came back together. They reunited. They became a team. And then nothing. Absolutely not. Not on Raw. When was the last time we saw them wrestling on Raw? Now all of a sudden they're potentially going to be getting a Raw Tag Team title match? Two guys who can't win a match to save their lives? But it's New York, kind of, and so if ever they were going to break their streak of losses, if Curt Hawkins was going to finally pick up that big W, and you know, given how they've treated the Revival, I think they drop the belts here. If they do this match, I think the Revival drop the belts to Ryder and Hawkins. Titles are a joke anyway, so who cares? Give these two a nice WrestleMania moment. I'm picking Hawkins and Ryder to win. Speaking of which, the SmackDown Tag Team titles are on the line in a fatal four-way match. The Usos, the newly signed Usos, they, according to PW Insider, signed their new contracts a few weeks ago, so they're locked in. They're defending their tag titles against The Bar, Rusev and Shinsuke Nakamura, and the team of Aleister Black and Ricochet. Alexa Bliss, she's the host of WrestleMania. She came out on SmackDown Tuesday night and added this match as punishment for the Usos forfeiting their match against the New Day in that gauntlet match the week before. And so here we are with a fatal four-way situation. You know, Rusev, The Bar to me has been there, done that. Talented guys, but I don't need to see them win the tag team titles back here. Rusev and Nakamura, they don't feel like a permanent team to me. Nor does Aleister Black and Ricochet, who I think coming out of WrestleMania, I mean, they could still team up here and there, but they really need to start focusing on these two as individual solo stars. They should not be a long-term tag team. So I'm picking the Usos to retain. Because none of these other teams, I don't think either should be together or appeal to me. And the Usos are, I think, the best tag team they have in this company right now. Who they feud with coming out of WrestleMania, I don't know. The shakeup may answer those questions. Maybe they'll promote a new team up from NXT or something. But I'm picking the Usos to retain the SmackDown belts here. We have Samoa Joe, despite making his main roster debut 2 years ago, Samoa Joe has yet to wrestle at a single WrestleMania. That all changes on Sunday when he defends the United States Championship against Rey Mysterio. Maybe. Mysterio hurt his right ankle in his match with Baron Corbin on Raw last Monday night, a match that never should have happened in the first place. This could have all been avoided. I mean, it was a fluky injury. It wasn't Corbin's fault, but if this match didn't happen, then Rey wouldn't have gotten hurt. On Instagram, Rey showed the slow-mo video of him landing, just landed awkwardly. Simple as that. He just landed awkwardly on his right ankle and rolled it or whatever he did to it. And he said that he is praying to be ready for WrestleMania. That's encouraging. That's really encouraging when you're praying to be okay for the show. He was supposed to wrestle Andrade Cien Almas on Tuesday. They scrapped that match. I hope Rey can go, if only because his son Dominic in this storyline here is supposed to be at ringside for the match, and I'd really like to see Joe choke him out. So I'm picking Samoa Joe to retain, assuming this match happens. If Rey can't go, I mean, look, I have to assume they already have something planned for John Cena, and it doesn't sound like whatever is planned for Cena involves Kurt Angle. I would like to see, in some backup scenario here, Joe throw down the gauntlet. You know, we've seen a lot of people do these U.S. Open challenges before. Samoa Joe says, you know what, I'm going to have my own U.S. Open challenge. Anybody who's got the guts to come out here and try to take this from me, come on down. And that's when John Cena's music hits and John Cena comes out and accepts. That way we at least get a Cena-Joe match, which is one of the things I thought maybe we were heading towards at WrestleMania. This is before they announced that Kurt was going to be having his farewell match. And I thought Cena would be better in that scenario. But if we end up with an impromptu Cena-Joe match at WrestleMania, I wouldn't mind that. Either way, I think Joe retains. We've got Falls Count Anywhere. The Miz takes on Shane McMahon. This is one of the best built matches on this entire card. Whatever you think of the match, maybe the second or third best built match, frankly, of all the matches on this show. And this is a story that dates all the way back to Crown Jewel and the big World Cup tournament they did back in October, where The Miz, quote, hurt himself, and SmackDown was going to have to forfeit their spot in the tournament, and Shane McMahon said, I don't think so. SmackDown's my show. I'll take over here. He wrestled, I think it was Dolph Ziggler, beat him, won the World Cup trophy, and it was this slow burn where Miz was courting Shane every week. I want to be tag team partners, and Shane wouldn't accept, and Shane finally said, look, you better not screw me. I'll team with you, but you better not fuck me over. And they became a tag team, and they won the SmackDown tag team titles before they dropped them at the Elimination Chamber, I think is where they dropped them to the Usos. And it was The Miz in that match who took the losing fall, and I believe it was the same at Fastlane, in Miz's hometown. I believe it was The Miz who took the losing fall, and they did the swerve where it wasn't Miz who turned on Shane, it was Shane who turned on Miz. And he beat the crap out of him, and he physically assaulted Miz's dad in the front row, and he's been taunting Miz for weeks now, putting that picture up on the Titantron of him grabbing his father's face. And The Miz has been in the role of heroic babyface, which is not a role that I'm used to seeing The Miz in. It's not, it's kind of like Kevin Owens playing babyface. I don't think it's his natural role long term, but the fans have taken to The Miz. The fans cheer for him, and they're in his corner, and so whatever they've been doing has been working. On SmackDown, Miz beat Sanity in a Falls Count Anywhere 1-on-3 handicap match. It spilled outside of the building into the parking lot. He pinned Eric Young. Shane was in the limo or SUV or whatever it was. He rolled down the window and smiled, and then he drove off. They should bring back the Mean Street Posse here to help Shane out in this match. What's Rodney up to? You know, we see Pete Gass making cameos on the network, on the Edge and Christian show. Pete Gass actually came out with his own book last year. But I've heard nothing about Rodney. Is he alive? Is he still around? Did he and Shane have a falling out? I would love to know. I still think Miz's dad, I assume he'll be at WrestleMania. And I don't know where he'll be sitting, but it's Falls Count Anywhere, so they can pretty much take the match anywhere they want to. Assuming that Mr. Miz is there, I think he gives his son the assist, maybe a nut shot on Shane or a slap. And Miz will end up the victor, picking Miz to win. I'm sure Shane will take some ridiculously, stupidly dangerous, unnecessary bump from a high altitude, maybe the balcony or something. But look, this feud has gone on long enough. They've built it up perfectly here to climax at WrestleMania. We don't always see feuds really reach their peak at WrestleMania anymore. WrestleMania used to be the place where a feud would climax and would end, and then you would start anew. And that still happens sometimes, but a lot of times they just sort of, it's just sort of the next chapter, and it just continues on. I don't think this feud needs to continue on at all. I think you blow it off here at WrestleMania. There's no reason for Shane to win if you're going to blow it off. And this would be the perfect place, I think, to give Miz the big win. Bobby Lashley defends the Intercontinental title against the Demon, Finn Balor, which all but guarantees that Balor is getting the belt back. Balor is my pick to win the title. The Demon character is undefeated on the main roster. His only loss with the paint on was to Samoa Joe in a cage match back in NXT. And they love to just ignore that that history, pretend like it never happened. The way they did the big reveal, I thought, on Raw was really lame. They had Balor show up on the Titantron as Finn Balor, and he's giving some corny dialogue, and you know, then we see smoke, and when the smoke clears, we see the Demon. And then he sticks his tongue out, and he goes, "Ah!" That's literally what he did. "Ah! What's that?" So lame. The way they did this was so lame. But I will say this, the Demon entrance, this will be the first time we get a Demon entrance at WrestleMania, I believe. I think the Demon entrance at MetLife is going to look pretty cool. Sasha Banks and Bayley defend their women's tag team titles in a fatal four-way against the Divas of Doom, Beth Phoenix and Natalya, the Samoan sleeping pill of Nia Jax and Tamina, and the Iconics. I know there are a lot of Iconic fans out there. Some people are probably even pulling for them to win the match. The Iconics annoy me, not in the, "Oh, they're great heels, put the belts on them" kind of way. They annoy me in the get off my TV kind of way. Nia and Tamina should be kept as far away from those belts as possible. So really, for me, it's between Sasha and Bayley and Natty and Beth. And I think it's cool that Beth is back and she looked like a beast on Monday night. She was dominant. She speared Tamina, I think, through the barricade at ringside. She's like the Beth Phoenix of old. She looks great, you know? I think that's great. I think Sasha and Bayley, though, should retain. I don't really see any reason to get the belts off of them. There's no need to take the belts off them so soon, even before they've had a chance to defend them in NXT. Remember, they said they made a pledge. We can defend them on Raw. We can defend them on SmackDown. And then that one week, they showed up on NXT and said, "Hey, you never know. We may come here and defend them." I'd like to see them have the chance to do that. Kurt Angle wrestles his farewell match against Baron Corbin. This farewell tour that Kurt has been on the one hand, it's been cool, the names that he's been back in the ring with one last time, AJ Styles for all of 90 seconds, Samoa Joe, Chad Gable. Now, not the ideal situation. I think Kurt Angle of 3 or 5 years ago against Chad Gable would have been incredible. The Kurt Angle of 10 years ago against the Chad Gable of today would have been amazing. I think the two of them working together. Ray and Kurt we never got. They did a little bit of a swerve on Monday. It was Ray and Corbin instead. But the other thing about this Kurt Angle farewell tour, and I said this last week, it is painfully obvious that Kurt should have retired years ago. That this retirement is coming at the right time now. It's time for him to step away. But realistically, it's 2 or 3 years too late. He is clearly hurting badly. You watch him. It's painful to watch this guy walk around. He's stiff as a board. And I love Kurt, and I think Kurt is one of the greatest of all time to do this. And it's sad to watch him struggle in this way. And it's completely understandable given this guy's injury history with his knees and his neck. I mean, the things that this guy did are absolutely insane. Absolutely crazy. The guy's out of his mind. So he's slowed down a lot. Part of it is age. He's getting older. He's almost 50 years old, I think. It's time. And I would have hoped for a better opponent, a bigger name, as I believe he does, he did, would hope for the same thing, than Baron Corbin, but it is what it is. You know, Corbin is the one that they're building. And this is why I think, by the way, that Corbin is winning this match. Baron Corbin is my pick to win, not my choice. If I were controlling the situation, this match wouldn't even be happening. But in terms of predictions, who do I think is going to win? I'm picking Baron Corbin. I fully expect them to have Corbin go over here. Like I said, he's the one they're building. Kurt's an old school guy. Kurt may be in a position to be like, hey, you know, I should be losing to this guy. On his final Raw as an active competitor, I don't know why, by the way, they kept calling it his final Raw ever, like he's fucking dying or banned from ever appearing on Raw again. I mean, the guy was the Raw GM for about 18 months. His last Raw as an active competitor is what they should have said. They gave him the final segment, which was nice of them to do. On the other hand, probably the flattest finish to a Raw heading into WrestleMania in many, many years. Maybe ever. But certainly in many, many years. That was the most anticlimactic, dull, boring, horrible, just go-home finish to a Raw before WrestleMania that I've seen. Now, it wasn't... Actually, I take back one thing. It wasn't as bad as the tug-of-war over the belt with Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. It's like Brock was fighting off some Samoan purse snatcher. That was worse, but this was still pretty bad. He had Corbin squealing in the ankle lock on the ramp to close out the show. I doubt we see the same thing here. We already saw it on Monday. That was what, you know, Kurt was teasing we would see at WrestleMania. I can't wait to tap out Baron Corbin at WrestleMania in front of, you know, whatever, 75, 80,000 people. We got to see it on Monday night. Do you think the same exact thing is going to happen on Sunday? I'd like to think so, but no, I don't. Which is why I'm picking Corbin to win. Much as it pains me to say it, look, I have little faith in anything happening here involving John Cena. I think they have other plans for him, whatever those plans are. I'd be happy to be proven wrong. Maybe it's all just one big surprise that they're saving for WrestleMania. But they took whatever happens at WrestleMania, whether Cena's involved or not, forget that. Put that on the side for a second. They took what could have been a really compelling WrestleMania match, even in the physical state that Kurt is in, and he, let's say he can't go more than 5 or 6 minutes, whatever the case may be. They took what could have been a very compelling build to a match going into WrestleMania, and they killed any interest that I had in it. And I know I'm not alone in saying that. I know many of you listening agree with me on this. The one good thing I will say, at least Kurt gets one last big WrestleMania match in front of 80,000 people as his big send-off. Some guys don't have that luxury. I just got done talking about The Amazing Red earlier. He didn't have one big last, you know, independent blow-off match. He retired in a YouTube video because he's too beat up. Sting. Look, I could think of worse ways to go out than wrestling Seth Rollins for the WWE Championship, but you think Sting wanted to go out that way? Getting hurt the way he did? Not being able to come back for one more big match or a match with The Undertaker that he's still to this day crowing about? You know, not everybody gets to dictate the terms of their departure. Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair, guys like that had these great send-offs where they knew going into WrestleMania, this is it. Even if it turns out that it really wasn't it, but this is it, right? Shawn Michaels, in his mind, this is going to be it for me. I'm going to wrestle The Undertaker. We're going to have another classic match. I get to say goodbye. And he stuck to his guns, I mean, for 8.5 years. But that was a great send-off. Ric Flair got one of the all-time great send-offs between his match with Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania and then what they did on Raw the next night, which is still to this day the greatest ending to a Raw episode ever, was that send-off that Ric Flair got. They went like 25 minutes overtime. They couldn't do that now. They got that hard stop now at 11 p.m., but Kurt Angle gets to go out, maybe not with the opponent he wanted, but he gets a big match at WrestleMania. So I think that's a good thing. Roman Reigns takes on Drew McIntyre. Roman Reigns was not supposed to be on this WrestleMania show. When he announced that his leukemia had returned and he was going to leave to undergo treatment, you had the dingbats who thought it was a work. But for the people with half a brain who knew, hey, this is serious stuff here, I don't think anybody expected that Roman was going to be back in time for WrestleMania. And here he is going into WrestleMania, having a match. It's not a main event level match, but he's having a match with Drew McIntyre, who is a star on the ascent. Now, I will say, you know, Drew hasn't exactly been lighting the world on fire for me, but I like how they've been building him up as a monster. They've been building him up as somebody who can challenge coming out of WrestleMania for the WWE champion or the the Universal Championship, the big red fruit roll-up belt. And even though they've been building Drew and they've been doing a good job with it, I think Roman ekes out a win here. It's not a dominant win. He ekes out a win and then immediately gets laid out when the match is over by McIntyre. Maybe even with a chair or something. McIntyre snaps. He beats down Roman. This thing isn't over between the two of them. But I don't see them giving Drew the straight clean win here. I think Roman is going to win this match. He's my pick to win. But again, I think it's going to be one of those barely won kind of scenarios, and then Drew's going to attack him when it's over. AJ Styles takes on Randy Orton. This is one of the WrestleMania matches I'm most looking forward to on Sunday. Maybe probably one of the top two or three WrestleMania matches I'm looking forward to. Styles and Orton have been kept apart largely over the last few years. They've wrestled, I think, a couple of times on television, never one-on-one before on pay-per-view. And for years I said, man, you know, it's just waiting, right? The big spot where AJ does the phenomenal forearm and Orton just counters it into an RKO. And boy, that's tailor-made for a big WrestleMania finish. Well, they gave it to us on Tuesday in a random segment. They were both guests on the Kevin Owens show. And they were going back and forth and getting real personal with each other. And Orton was talking about how, you know, when AJ was wrestling in high school gyms and armories, I was competing at WrestleMania. And AJ says, you know what? You're right. You were competing at WrestleMania. You were also doing something else I wasn't doing, failing drug tests. Orton said, now that John Cena is off in Hollywood, AJ, you've assumed the role now of corporate bitch. Anyway, this breaks down into a fight. AJ goes for the phenomenal forearm into a picture-perfect RKO. They blew the spot 5 days before WrestleMania, I assume, because Orton is not winning this match. And if they were going to save that for WrestleMania, that has to end the match. I'm sorry. If they save that spot for WrestleMania, Orton has to win. And the fact that they kind of gave it away on TV is one of the things, anyway, that tells me that I think AJ is going to win this match. So, I've got AJ getting the win. No holds barred. Batista takes on Triple H. And if Triple H loses, his career is over. This is also going to be Batista's last match. He's said this for years, that he wants to come back. He wants to not just wrestle Triple H, but in interviews, he has said for years he wants to come back and put Triple H over in his final match. Triple H has never beaten Batista one-on-one before. And so I guess this is Big Dave's way of paying him back and saying thank you, because he was such a very pivotal part of Batista's career. Batista owes a lot of his success to Triple H. It was Triple H, and maybe Triple H and Flair together, who sort of handpicked Batista and Randy Orton as the two young guys back in 2002, I guess it would have been, or 2003, to be part of Evolution. They were handpicked. And even when they got hurt, there was, I think, a house show match against the Dudleys. It was a disaster because I think Batista got hurt. And I think Bubba Ray maybe stepped on Randy Orton's foot and broke his foot. They both were hurt. They both ended up in the hospital. And even then, I remember hearing Triple H, you know, talk to them and said, look, don't worry about it. Your spots are going to be here when you get back. You are the two guys that I have handpicked. He handpicked them for greatness. And to be fair, the company, I'm sure, picked Randy Orton. I mean, they probably just took one look at him and they knew this guy, they were going to groom him for something big. But Batista caught fire in a way that nobody saw coming. In fact, a spot that was probably going to go to Randy Orton at WrestleMania back in 2005 ended up going to Batista. You know, so you can't, there definitely are situations you can point to where the company shifts its plans because the fans go one way, even though they wanted to go the other way. And that's one example of it. The way the fans were reacting to Batista, they just went with it. It was just organic. And they said, huh, this guy's catching fire. And it took off and he became a big star. So he owes a lot of his career and a lot of his success, if we're being legit here, to Triple H. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if this is a case where he really just wants to pay him back for everything that he has done for him. This, to me, is probably the most predictable match outcome on this show. Triple H has not won a WrestleMania match since his win over Sting at WrestleMania 31. Batista, you'd have to go back even farther to find the WrestleMania win for him. He hasn't won a match at WrestleMania since he beat Umaga at WrestleMania 24 over 10 years ago. That will go down as the final WrestleMania win for Batista, because he's not getting one here either. Batista is not winning this match. Triple H is winning. And if this is Batista's send-off, and I believe it is, I think in his mind he probably feels like he's done all he can do. He got the match he wanted. He's got his career in Hollywood. He's not getting any younger. You know, Batista, unlike others, I think is going to stick to his guns on this. I think this is it. I think this is his last match. And I have to say, the build-up for this on the whole, I think, has been very lackluster. I just had higher expectations, I guess, for not the match itself, but the build. And it's been very disappointing to me, although I did like what they did on Monday, I guess. You know, Batista came out, he said nothing. He was in his hometown of D.C. He stood there with the spotlight on him in the ring, and all he said was, "Hunter, kiss my ass." And he put his shades on, he had this big goofy smile on his face, this big goofy grin, big troll face by Big Dave on Raw last Monday. I did think that was great. But on the whole, this build-up, I think, has just been very lackluster. The no-holds-barred stipulation is going to help a lot. Now they can use weapons, and they can do table spots and not risk being disqualified. But I think it's the most predictable outcome on this show. I think Triple H wins. We've got Brock Lesnar defending the Universal Championship against the winner of the 2019 Men's Royal Rumble match, Seth Rollins. Roman Reigns, of course, I talked about him before, he got sick. And as a result of that, he had to surrender the Universal title. He had finally slayed the beast at SummerSlam. Only 2 months later to drop the belt, and who got it back? Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar got the belt right back. He has a lot of history with Seth Rollins at WrestleMania, going back to WrestleMania 31, when Rollins cashed in Money in the Bank. He never pinned Brock Lesnar. He screwed him out of the title. He pinned Roman Reigns. Brock lost the championship. Brock tried to kill him. Tried to kill Rollins on Raw the next night. Couldn't get his hands on him. Fast forward to later on that year, they had a pay-per-view match that Lesnar totally dominated. He was about to win before The Undertaker popped up and kicked him in the dick, which is something that he ought to get used to. I mean, it happened again to him on Raw last Monday night. He's got to protect the crown jewels there. So that's the history that we know of between these two. Of course, they were also part of that great, and this goes back even before WrestleMania in 2015, they were part of that big triple threat match where Lesnar did pin Rollins in that match, but Rollins is the one member of the Shield that Brock Lesnar has never beaten or pinned straight up one-on-one. One-on-one. Has never pinned Seth Rollins. He's beaten Roman Reigns. He pinned him in the main event last year of WrestleMania. WrestleMania 32, he beat Dean Ambrose, but he's not beaten Seth Rollins. I don't think they've driven that point home hard enough in this story. But this is a story 4 years in the making, and the question is, do you change the title here? You know, this, you know, in another world, this would have been the main event of the show because the Universal title is positioned as the top title in the company. Brock is one of the biggest attractions just by virtue of him never showing up. It's kind of a big deal when he actually does show up to wrestle. This apparently was going to possibly be the main event. It came down to the wire whether it was going to be these two or the women. They made the right call to go with the women, but otherwise it would have been this match. But the question is, do you do the title change here, or given some of the other big matches on this show where they can have the babyface get the big, you know, heroic win and the crowd goes crazy for him? You know, do you do that with Becky, Kofi, and Seth, or do you do it with two of the three? That's the question. If you said to me, you could do it with two, but one has to be sacrificed, who do you sacrifice? I sacrifice Rollins. I'm picking Brock Lesnar to retain the championship here and win this match. And I don't think they have to have Seth win here. In fact, if they want to get the belt on Seth, they don't have to do it here. And they don't have to wait until Saudi Arabia in June. Because that show now has been pushed back. It's not going to be in May. It's going to be in June. They don't even have to wait that long. Why not shock some people by having Brock win? I guess it wouldn't be that shocking anymore because he's won plenty of other matches at WrestleMania. But why not do something that has not been done since Brock Lesnar came back to WWE in 2012. This guy has been back in the company now for 7 years, and we have yet to see a single match with Brock Lesnar on Monday Night Raw. Well, first time for everything. Why not have Lesnar win here? Rollins is just crazed and somehow talks his way into a championship match again on Monday night in Brooklyn against Brock. Brock against the wishes of Paul Heyman, who of course is always saying he doesn't fight for free, but he gets Brock riled up enough and Brock says, yeah, I'll wrestle you. And of course this is against Heyman's wishes. And now we have a big main event on Monday night to promote a Universal Championship match, a rare Brock Lesnar Monday Night Raw main event. And in that match, Rollins wins the championship. Why not? This card is so bloated and so many matches. I don't even know how many there are right now. You've got these other special moments you can have on the show that'll send the crowd home happy. It's not like this match is even going on last. You really don't need Seth to win this match here. Make Raw feel a little bit more special. I mean, the Raw after Mania is always a special show anyway, but that's what I would consider doing. If the goal is to get the belt on Seth, it doesn't have to be here. It could be the next night. And also, if they've delayed this Saudi Arabia show, and they do keep the belt on Brock, and they're going to keep it on him at least until then, if not even longer, if they're just not going to pull the trigger on Rollins, do we really need another 2 months, at least, of an absentee champion on this show? Have we not had enough time with an absentee champion on Monday Night Raw? They need to get that belt off of him, but I think you save it for Monday night. We've got Daniel Bryan defending the WWE Championship against Kofi Kingston. You know, sometimes the best stories are the ones that you luck into. It was Randy Orton stomping on Mustafa Ali's face and injuring him that led to Kofi Kingston taking Ali's spot in that first gauntlet match they did on SmackDown. He took Ali's spot in the Elimination Chamber, went all the way to the end, came within inches of becoming WWE Champion for the first time. In the end, he fell short. And by the way, poor Ali, right? He lost his spot. Now he lost his name. Hopefully he doesn't lose his wife or his girlfriend to somebody on the main roster or something horrible like that. This guy's lost enough as it is. But as a result of his bad luck, Kofi Kingston has reaped the rewards. Something very cool happened, which is that the fans got behind Kofi Kingston in a way that they haven't in all of these 11 years that he's been on the main roster. And it's interesting to look at really what is a role reversal here. 4 years ago, or five, I guess now, 5 years ago, was Daniel Bryan in this position, being willed into the WrestleMania main event by the fans, who got behind him as the underdog. And he went all the way to WrestleMania, he overcame the odds, he overcame the authority, and he won the championship. And here we are now, Kofi Kingston being willed into this spot by the fans. Vince McMahon changes his mind. Not going to be Daniel Bryan against Kevin Owens, it's going to be Daniel Bryan against Kofi Kingston. And we don't have the authority faction anymore, but Vince McMahon, there's no higher authority in this company than Vince McFuckingMahon, okay? And that's a great name I just created for him, by the way. Vince McFuckingMahon, I like that. There's no greater authority in this company than him. It's the same angle played out, only this time Bryan is the heel. And he's basically looking at himself 5 years into the future, and his name is Kofi Kingston. Kofi Kingston is now in the Daniel Bryan underdog role going into WrestleMania. But you look at a guy like Kofi Kingston and you think, because a lot of people, they can't buy Kofi in this spot. They just can't. Kofi Kingston, he's only, you know, we all know what Billy Graham thinks of Kofi Kingston, and some people agree with that point of view. Kofi Kingston's a small guy, he's too small to be champion. Other people look at him and go, look, it's not about size. I just can't buy into the fact that this guy, who comes out every week looking like a goofball, throwing pancakes into the crowd, is suddenly going to be the WWE champion. Or for where he's been positioned for all these years, in the middle of the card, all of a sudden I'm supposed to take this guy seriously? As a title contender, as a threat to the championship? I think they've done a good job of, with what they did in the Elimination Chamber and the gauntlet stuff, of showing you that, yeah, Kofi can be a threat. He fell just short, but he can be a threat. They haven't treated him like a total joke. I mean, he was still coming out the other night throwing pancakes into the crowd. But you're going to have a lot of people who look at Kofi Kingston and say, Kofi Kingston is a good hand. He's a great utility player off the bench who they could plug into any situation we need him for. He's not the guy on your baseball team that's going to be hitting for home runs, batting 350. He'll be that guy who can, you know, get down a good bunt and, you know, he can have a good, he's a singles hitter, he's a doubles hitter, he's batting 260, 270. That's Kofi Kingston. Kofi Kingston is the guy who kicked The Miz so hard in the face, in the head, that he left a permanent scar from a Trouble in Paradise kick. Kofi Kingston is the guy who would come up with all these creative, innovative save spots in the Royal Rumble match. He would never win, but boy, this guy was sure creative. Kofi Kingston was the guy who once got a big singles push 10 years ago. Made one mistake in a match and got buried for it. He's the guy who was stuck with two other guys they didn't know what to do with in a faction that had no business getting over as large and as big as it did. But it did. It did get over, and it made those guys more money than they ever could have dreamed of. And years ago, and he's still doing it to this day, but this is not a new development in this storyline. For years now, Xavier Woods has called Kofi Kingston the most underrated, underappreciated talent in all of WWE. And he wanted to make it his mission, not even for himself or for Big E. He wanted to make it his mission, both of them, to see to it that one day Kofi Kingston would become WWE champion. He has said this for years. If you thought the day would come that Kofi Kingston would be challenging for the title of WrestleMania, that's a trick question, because that person doesn't exist. Nobody thought that. Nobody thought that. Not even Kofi Kingston. Kofi Kingston, until now, never even had a singles match for the WWE title on any show. Forget WrestleMania. Never. In 11 years, he never got a singles match for the championship. Never got a world title opportunity. Not one. This is his first. If you don't count, of course, him being in the Elimination Chamber. This is one-on-one. First time that he's getting a crack at the championship. It may be his first singles match of any kind at WrestleMania. I think it is, actually. I can't remember him having a singles match at all at WrestleMania. So all of these milestones here are being met in this match. And then there's, of course, the other aspect to this. We had the website, The Undefeated, which is owned by ESPN. They do these long-form sports articles. They had a whole feature this week on Kofi Kingston's fight to become the fourth black heavyweight champion. Not counting Ron Simmons, I guess, who should be counted, but they're talking WWE only. The article says, and this is from the article. It says, since Nature Boy Buddy Rogers was crowned the inaugural WWE champion in 1963, only three black men have held one of the company's heavyweight titles. Mark Henry, Booker T, and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And so there, in this article, they're positioning this as Kofi could become number four. In all the years this company has been operating, he could become number four. There's a lot of people out there listening to this going, number four? Fuck that. He's going to be number one. Because we're talking about the WWE title. We're not talking about the World Heavyweight title. The World Heavyweight title, at one time, which was supposed to be a SmackDown title, this tells you how seriously they were taking the brand split the last time before they ended it. The World Heavyweight title, when Alberto Del Rio had it, was once defended in an opening match on Monday Night Raw. Like it was nothing, like it was a TV title. That's how much stock they put in that big gold belt there for many years. For the WWE title, you can get into a debate with people about whether The Rock counts. Is The Rock black enough? Look, I don't want to have a debate with anybody. I'm tired. I'm tired of hearing the debating on that. People have their opinions, they're very strong opinions, but there are a lot of people who don't think The Rock counts because he doesn't identify as black as much as he really highlights his Samoan heritage. And you can laugh at that, or you can mock that, and you could do that. Everybody has their opinion on it, but to a lot of people, they take this very seriously, and that's how they honestly feel. And to them, Kofi could become the first black WWE champion, whether you think that's accurate or not. And that's a big deal to a lot of people. So, yeah, there are people who are going to look at this from that angle. Other people are going to say, who cares? It's not about race. Why does it have to be about race? It's about Kofi. It's about a guy, 11 years, he's busted his ass, and now it's brought him to this point. What a great moment if he wins the championship. Whatever perspective you're coming from, this means a lot to a lot of people. They want to see Kofi pull this thing out in the end. This is a big deal to a lot of people. You know, on Tuesday, they had a contract signing. And I don't know how many of you picked up on this, but they showed Kofi Kingston during one of those backstage segments, I think before they went to commercial. He's in the back. He's got the contract in his hand. And if you look close enough into the text of the contract, the date that they have listed for the event for WrestleMania, the date on the contract is March 10th, which was the date of the Fastlane pay-per-view. Now, call me cynical. I don't really think this is going to happen, but boy, would it piss a lot of people off if Kofi wins, he gets a three count, and out comes Vince McMahon to say, wait a minute, the contract was invalid because it had the wrong date on it. I don't think they'd go that far with it, but there's a chance. I wouldn't put it past them. But Michael Cole hosted a contract signing on Tuesday with Brian and with Kofi. And Brian was going on, I'm going to give you a life lesson. I think Daniel Bryan in this role that he's been in has been great. Let me just say that. When it was time for Kofi to rebut everything Brian said, and I don't know why he even let Brian go on for as long as he did. I always think the baby faces look dumb when, you know, they let the other guy go on for fucking 5 or 10 minutes uninterrupted, just bashing them. Finally, Kofi gets the mic, and I don't think it was his strongest night on the microphone. I thought he looked nervous. He's not used to being in this spot. I mean, look, this is his big go-home promo on the WrestleMania, you know, final SmackDown before WrestleMania. He looked very nervous to me. I don't know how many other people may have picked up on it, so that didn't really impress me too much. But I'm picking Kofi Kingston to win this match. I want Kofi Kingston to win. I think he is going to win. I think they're going to give people the big moment at WrestleMania. Not only that, I think he probably is safe. Now that this Saudi show has been pushed back, apparently from May 3rd, I think, to June 7th, I think he's probably safe if he wins it until June. Unless Big E turns on him on the next SmackDown, and then Vince McMahon gives Big E a title match and Big E wins it, which is always possible, that New Day or Big E could turn on Kofi. But with the next Saudi show in June, if they're going to have a WWE title match on that show, remember, Daniel Bryan did not want to go to Saudi Arabia last time. He, like John Cena and others, said, I'm not going. And he didn't. He didn't travel. He was supposed to actually wrestle AJ for the WWE title. He wouldn't go. They had to do the match on TV instead. Now, I could see them looking at this and going, you know, Bryan's probably not going to want to go back to this place again. We should get the title off of him, at least until that show blows over, and then we can put the championship back on him when we're back on American soil. That could very well be the case here. So, I really think, though, that all the signs are pointing to a Kofi win here at WrestleMania, and I hope it happens. But Daniel Bryan, this sort of eco-friendly, environmental madman, Daniel Bryan with the hemp belt, I think is a great character, and actually it's a much stronger character than Kofi Kingston is. Bryan should get the belt back. But I think you give Kofi his moment at WrestleMania, and you give the fans the right payoff. They didn't do it with Booker T and Triple H at WrestleMania, which was a very similar and a much more overtly racial tone to that storyline than this one. But it was a similar deal where people like you don't belong in spots like this. People like you aren't champion. People like you are here to entertain and to dance and to be silly. Just like New Day. New Day is goofy and silly and here to entertain. It's not as overtly racial as the angle from 2003, but there are many similarities. And to this day, the ending of that match irks the fuck out of me. I don't want to see a similar thing happen here. Kofi Kingston needs to win this match. And for the first time ever, WWE's three favorite words, the women will close out the show at WrestleMania in the main event. It is now winner take all. First winner-take-all main event at WrestleMania, I believe, since Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior. Champion versus champion, title for title at WrestleMania 6. One woman will leave with both the Raw and SmackDown women's titles. SmackDown champion Charlotte Flair, Raw champion Ronda Rousey, and Becky Lynch, the winner of the 2019 Women's Royal Rumble match. Joan Jett will sing Ronda Rousey to the ring to her Bad Reputation song. Charlotte against Ronda was really, in the minds of a lot of fans, and maybe even the company, but in the minds of a lot of fans, penciled in as far back as a year ago. A lot of fans were convinced that WrestleMania 35 was going to be the first time ever the women would headline, and it was going to be Charlotte against Ronda Rousey. From that moment that Ronda debuted at WrestleMania and looked as good as she did, people were talking about that as the likely and potential main event this year for WrestleMania. Had Roman Reigns not gotten sick, I'm sure he would have been in that spot again. I still think at the end of the day they would have voted to go with Roman against Dean Ambrose was going to be the rumored match for WrestleMania for the championship. But you know what they say about the best laid plans? Shit happens. And a funny thing happened along the way. That is the rise of Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch was doing a whole lot of nothing. She was on the back burner on SmackDown for the longest time. And then I'd say it was probably around May of last year. I didn't hear anybody else talking about this, but she started racking up some wins. And I started talking about how one of the great low-key stories on SmackDown to keep an eye on is this winning streak that all of a sudden Becky Lynch seems to have gone on. And then she kept winning, and she kept winning, and then people started talking about it and acknowledging it, and on commentary they were acknowledging it. Until finally, she earned the right to challenge for the championship at SummerSlam. And it was going to be Becky against Carmella. Then Charlotte came back. She popped a tit and came back. And they put her in the match at SummerSlam and turned it into a triple threat. And of course, Charlotte got the win. And Becky was screwed out of what should have been a great crowning moment for her. And she confronted her when the match was over. And she smacked the shit out of her and beat her up. And this was supposed to be the big Becky Lynch heel turn. And it didn't quite work out that way. The fans took to Becky Lynch because, first of all, they like her, number one. And number two, they agree with her in storyline that this woman has gotten screwed over. Charlotte Flair is the one who's handed everything. Becky had to start winning matches and winning matches and winning matches to earn the right to challenge for the title. She earned her way into the match. Charlotte came back, got one match on TV that she won, and all of a sudden she's getting a title shot. And the fans resented her for it. They sided with Becky. Because they could also probably relate to her. Maybe it happened to them in real life. Maybe it happened to them at work. Maybe they work their ass off and somebody passes them up for a promotion. It's the sort of thing that I think people on a human level can relate to. And like I said, they just like Becky. People like Becky Lynch. And so she became the hottest star in the company. And of course, the stuff with Nia Jax punching her in the face and breaking her nose and the match having to be called off with Ronda, everything that happened along the way, all of the pieces fell into place perfectly for this woman. The stars aligned for Becky Lynch in a way that I'm sure she never could have dreamed of. Just like Kofi. You think Becky Lynch expected that she would be headlining WrestleMania one day? I mean, it's nice to have hopes and dreams. Everybody should have them. Everybody should have something they're fighting for. But do you honestly think either one of them thought this was ever going to happen? Now, on Monday night, they were forced, all three of them, to team up with the stipulation that if they cannot coexist, and if one of them attacks the other, that person would be out of the WrestleMania main event. And so they put them all together for a match against the Riot Squad, who they had vanquished pretty easily in that beat-the-clock shit on TV the previous week. So now they just put them back in the ring again with the Riot Squad. And they were barely getting along, and then Ronda tagged herself in, and she, I think it was maybe Sarah Logan, put her in the armbar, tapped her out. As soon as she tapped out and the match was over, the stipulation was lifted. Ronda got up, and she immediately attacked Charlotte. And that's where everything broke down. Becky got in the ring. It's just this massive brawl erupted, the referees came down, these rent-a-cops, independent cops came down to the ring, these indie cops came down to the ring to try to break things up. Charlotte booted one of them in the face. I'm surprised his head didn't land in the 15th row holy shit, did she kick this guy in the face? I hope he got hazard pay for working that night. Either that or sign him to a developmental deal if he's not already signed. And so this giant brawl ended with all three women being handcuffed because they were beating people up. They were beating up cops. They were beating up referees.
Oh my God!
All three ended up in handcuffs. They're still fighting. Even though their hands are cuffed behind their back, they're still kicking and fighting and screaming. And so they escort them to the back. And that's where this thing just got way over the top. They were still fighting. They ended up, I don't know why. Why would they put Becky and Ronda in the back of the same cop car? Well, it's wrestling, that's why. Otherwise, it wouldn't make for good TV. But I thought they had this great camera shot when they put the two of them in the back of the same cop car. And the camera guy gets in position where you could see Ronda's face. And they both have this, like, 2 second period where they stare at each other. And then they start kicking the shit out of each other. And Ronda kicks the glass out of the window. They take them out of the car. And then somehow, I think it was Becky who got behind the wheel without hands and drove the car and rammed the cop car into the car in front of him. And this thing was just a complete clusterfuck in the best possible way. I enjoyed the shit out of this segment. I think most people did. Some people were, it just wasn't their thing. They thought it was too silly or stupid. But to me, and it kind of goes to the John Oliver segment, which I'm going to talk about here in a second, when he was talking about the things I love about wrestling, and he's showing all these ridiculous angles. And he goes, this is what makes wrestling so great. And you know what? He's right. In a lot of ways, he's right. Wrestling needs stuff like this. For all the serious stuff, you've got to even it out. You've got to balance it out. And when they do stuff like this, and it just works, it's the best possible television. And this segment, this one segment, has had people talking all week. So I think it accomplished exactly what they were looking to accomplish, which is getting people excited about this match. It lost some steam. They had gotten away from what had made this such an appealing feud and an appealing match going into WrestleMania. And they suddenly got those people who maybe weren't so interested, I think, interested in this match again. And even though I still maintain it should have been one-on-one, it should have been Becky and Ronda, they should have just continued building that up between the two of them. And I'm not the biggest fan of Charlotte being inserted into this match. Charlotte held up her end here in this angle, because between the boot to the guy in the ring, and then later on when Ronda was in the backseat of the cop car, she stuck her head out the window, and Charlotte came from out of nowhere with this huge knee, and just kneed Ronda right in the side of the head. It was great. It was the highlight of this entire segment. This was great. This was just great train wreck, can't look away television, where they just, all three of them came across like a bunch of crazy people. Now, of course, if this were real, they'd be locked up and they'd throw away the key. And I think it was by the next morning they were released on their own recognizance. They have to, report back to Little People's Court under the ring at a later date. So that's how they got out of that. That's how all three are now out on bail, or however they want to describe it. But again, silly stuff like this to me is what makes these shows really interesting. The problem is, more often than not, when they do silly shit, it's not funny, nor is it entertaining. It's cringeworthy. But that's not what this was. I really enjoyed this segment. So now the question is, it's winner take all. What are they going to do here? I think you stay the course and go with the obvious outcome, which is Becky Lynch winning both the Raw and the SmackDown Women's Championship. Becky Lynch, I don't care whether Ronda sticks around or not, Becky should get the win here. This has been building for months to a Becky Lynch win. And I think she wins both belts. I'm picking her to go all the way. I think she closes out the show with both belts hoisted up above her head. And I think the way they sort of proceed with this, they're not going to unify the belts. I don't really want to see them unify the belts. I don't think they need to unify the belts right now. I think before the shakeup rolls around, the shakeup's only about 2 weeks away, she's going to be forced to surrender one of the titles, and they may give her the choice of which one. Probably the SmackDown one will end up being vacant. That would be my guess as far as how they handle this. Similar to what they did when the Warrior beat Hogan at WrestleMania 6. He won both belts, but they wouldn't let him defend both belts. So he gave up the Intercontinental. They put it up in a tournament. That was the tournament that Mr. Perfect won to win that belt for the first time. I think we're probably in for a similar situation here. So I think it's Becky and Kofi getting their big crowning moments here at WrestleMania. I think Seth Rollins is the odd man out, at least until Raw the next night. I would seriously consider having Brock wrestle on Raw the next night for the first. I wouldn't make a habit out of it. Maybe do it this once. When SmackDown comes to Fox in the fall, if Brock ends up on the SmackDown roster, they can maybe have him wrestle on that debut show, maybe. But it's been long. It's been seven years. And every year we talk about how this might be it for Brock. His contract is up. Is he going to go fight in UFC? What's he going to do? Brock's going to be around for a long time, I'm sure, because Brock realizes he can make a shitload of money for very minimal work. Vince McMahon does not want to let Brock Lesnar escape and go somewhere else to wrestle. And so even with a reduced work schedule, he's willing to throw a ridiculous amount of money at this guy. And Brock can get these big payoffs in Saudi Arabia. And it's a great gig. I don't know why he would ever give it up. Why would you give that up to go back to UFC to get punched in the head? Been there, done that, dude. You're not getting any younger. Just take the money and go home. It's a great gig. So every year we have this conversation. Is this it for Brock? Is this it for Brock? No, I don't think it'll ever be it for Brock. I don't think he's going anywhere. But for all this talk about how every year could be his last, well, where's the harm then in having him work a TV match? As long as you don't make a habit out of it, I don't see what the big deal is. And you might even be able to, you know, bring people in to watch the show who ordinarily wouldn't. With the right angle, under the right circumstance, I think it can make for a really exciting show, a really exciting main event. But I think Seth ends up being the odd man out here at WrestleMania. I really do. I'll be at MetLife Stadium for the show, so I will not be able to get a YouTube review up right away that night. It'll have to wait until sometime on Monday. So as far as when that might be up, it's got to be up before I leave because I'm going to Raw at Barclays. So I would expect the WrestleMania review will be up on YouTube sometime by midday on Monday. So and I may or may not push it out to the feed to everybody else, Spotify and everything. I probably will, but right now just watch for it on YouTube. And boy, that was exhausting. This is a long freaking show. Oh my God. By the way, I mentioned the AAA press conference at Madison Square Garden is taking place right now as I'm speaking, and it is official. AAA has announced that their first ever date at MSG will be held Sunday, September 15th. So I believe it says here on the eve of Mexican Independence Day. So that is the confirmed date for the first ever AAA show at Madison Square Garden. I don't know anything as far as matches yet or confirmed names, but the date is Sunday, September 15th. Now, John Oliver roasted WWE on his show on HBO this past week. Last week tonight, he dedicated a large majority of the show to taking on WWE and the way that it treats its performers. And this segment was perfectly timed for WrestleMania week. Of course, that was not done by accident. I'm sure a lot of the writers who work with him on the show, who are wrestling fans, made him very aware of that. You know, is Oliver really that big of a wrestling fan, or is he just saying that? I don't know. He might be. He says he is. I guess there's no reason to doubt him. But it could also just be that his writers just got him very educated as far as what to talk about here on the show. But if he is a fan, that's cool that he would admit that he is such a big fan. But he was able to put that aside and objectively take on WWE on a separate issue, even if he likes them and he likes watching some of their shows. He certainly did not spare them here in this segment. A segment that Jim Cornette, after watching it, called the absolute most truthful outside media piece I've seen on wrestling in over 40 years. The day after it aired, on Monday, WWE stock price took a hit, fell nearly 3%. It has rebounded a little bit since. When I checked it this morning, it was around $89 a share. I don't know where it is now. So it definitely had an impact. It got picked up in a lot of media, major media publications and websites. If you watched it, you didn't learn anything, I don't think, that you didn't already know. But this was not a segment that was geared to you or me. This was not a segment that was geared to the wrestling audience. This was exposed to a more mainstream audience that knows nothing about any of this, or they're casual fans at best, and they probably didn't even know that wrestlers are classified as independent contractors and not employees, and that they have to pay for their own health insurance, and they have to pay for their own road expenses outside of airfare. They probably didn't even know any of these things. That's the audience that this segment was geared to. They don't care because they don't know enough to care. And now hopefully they do. And for as much as WWE loves getting mainstream attention, you just know they were pulling their hair out watching this. Because like I said, it got picked up all over the place. Hollywood Reporter, Time Magazine, among others, all picked this story up. As far as the segment itself, he was very complimentary, I think, about wrestling in general and just how fun and kind of off the wall and over the top it could be. And he showed a lot of clips, a lot of old clips, you know, the beer truck with Austin, the milk truck with Kurt Angle, you know, Vince having his head shoved up Rikishi's ass on SmackDown. There wasn't a ton of recent stuff in here, but they showed all those clips, and then they got into the serious stuff, which was a discussion about the way that Vince McMahon treats his talent and the way they classify them, like I said, as independent contractors and not employees, and the abnormally high rate of wrestler deaths, young wrestler deaths, and he compared it to the NFL, and he got into all the specifics about all this stuff that, again, we've heard before and we've talked about here before. I have to defend WWE, just in that they have made some really positive changes in recent years, and really it was since Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit died. It was after Eddie's death that they instituted the wellness policy, which at the time they claimed, well, we were going to do this anyway. This was already something that was in the works. Okay. After Benoit passed away is when they really seemed to get serious and started making some real changes. And over the years, they've instituted the concussion testing. And if you're a wrestling fan, you know how seriously now they seem to take that kind of stuff, because there have been matches and angles that have been stalled out because they simply will not let somebody back if they do not pass their concussion protocol. Alexa Bliss went through this fairly recently. Others have gone through it where they feel fine and they just will not be cleared to come back because it's a liability. And well, you would hope they care about the performer's safety, but it's also a liability for the company if they let them back in the ring and something happens. So they do take that stuff a lot more seriously now than they did during the time that, you know, Oliver was showing a lot of these clips in the early 2000s and the mid 2000s, where a lot of these safeguards just didn't exist. You know, they just were not put into place. And also, you know, mentioning names like Randy Savage and Roddy Piper and Chyna and King Kong Bundy. I mean, of all the young wrestler deaths that they could have cited, I would not have mentioned any of those names. King Kong Bundy. I mean, you know, King Kong Bundy was 60, 61 or 63, depending on who you believe, with his birthday, when he died. But does anybody really look at King Kong Bundy as a premature wrestling death that you can blame wrestling or blame Vince McMahon for? Like, I don't. I mean, apparently he had health issues he was dealing with for a while. I don't know if they were related to his weight or what. That's just speculation, but he had his own health issues. And he passed away in his early 60s, and that's still very young to die, but it's a lot older than a lot of other guys they could have cited. You know, Macho Man, also Macho Man was, in his mid to late 50s when he passed away, but Savage hadn't wrestled for Vince McMahon since 1994. Not only wrestled, he hadn't even been welcomed back into the company. All ties were severed with him 25 years ago. And really, when Savage's physique really started to change and his body swelled and he got all jacked, it was when he was in WCW. That was when he was obviously pumping himself full of steroids like there was no tomorrow. And maybe that had as much to do with his untimely demise as anything. Again, I wouldn't have included him on a list like this. Chyna had a whole bunch of issues, drug-related, and, you know, she had her demons and her addictions. And again, I thought was a little off-base, some of the names they cited. But I didn't really find fault with too much in this segment. You know, when you watch that segment of Vince McMahon knocking the papers out of Armin Katan's hands in that HBO interview from back in 2003, boy, does he look like a fucking asshole in that clip. You know, it's not even that he's making the argument that, look, these guys wrestled for other promoters and other promotions, and in some cases they passed through my company and worked here for a year or 2 years. It's sad what happened to them. It makes me feel awful. But no, I don't feel I shoulder the blame the way that you're saying I should shoulder the blame. It wasn't like a measured, reasonable response. It was Vince McMahon acting like his fucking television character, making funny faces and saying, absolutely not, none whatsoever, I bear no responsibility at all, and here, let me act like a fucking dick, and I'm gonna knock the papers out of your hand because I'm a 5-year-old in a 55-year-old's body. Boy, did he look like a scumbag. And it looks even worse now. When you watch that clip back, and it's how many years later? It was bad then. It looks even worse now. So it's hard for me to sit here and have sympathy for somebody like Vince McMahon when he acts like such a jerk-off. When you watch that, and it just seems he has no empathy whatsoever, he's completely devoid of any empathy. This is a segment that, frankly, is a long time coming from a mainstream, you know, media show. I mean, it's not 60 Minutes or something, but still, you know, there's a lot of people that watch Oliver's content, whether it's on YouTube or on HBO. It gets millions of views online, I know that. And it's about time somebody called them out on this shit. You know, he mentioned during the segment, CM Punk. They found the footage of when CM Punk shit himself on SmackDown, which he talked about on Colt Cabana's podcast. They even played that portion of the podcast. And he talked about how he was all hopped up on Z-Packs because he wasn't feeling well, and they just kept pumping him with antibiotics. Well, you know that antibiotics, certain ones anyway, can, you know, look, they can give you some unpleasant side effects. And he talked about how he was wrestling and he shit himself. He shit his britches. He tweeted about it. The company made him take the tweet down. They found the tweet. Punk actually tweeted him after the show aired. He was tweeting in support of Oliver, and apparently he likes his show. So he talked about all of this stuff. And they got into a discussion also about there's no off-season for wrestlers. And I thought the timing of that was interesting, because this week there was a Post article, a New York Post article that ran about WWE and other wrestling promotions as well, not just WWE. The future of wrestling on TV and streaming services, and it tied in very well with this John Oliver piece and this idea of a possible off-season, because there's still people who talk about an off-season. Roman Reigns, a few months ago, was asked about this. Roman Reigns said, I would be in favor of an off-season, absolutely. He would be the biggest proponent of there being an off-season for the talent. He would absolutely get behind it. This is what Roman Reigns said. Roman Reigns is one of their biggest stars. So people still talk about this idea like it's actually realistic. And my answer is always the same every time this comes up. And in reading this article, I'm glad it ran, because it just proves my point. It's just not practical. Case in point, there's a quote in this article from this guy, Jacob Ullman. He's the senior vice president of production and talent development at Fox Sports. Fox is their new partner, right? They're moving SmackDown to Fox in the fall. This is what he said about WWE. It's unique in that it's 52 weeks a year. We've never broadcast a sport that's 52 weeks a year. Live programming becomes that much more important and really is the kind of foundation for our new version of Fox. And that right there is the biggest reason why there will never be, and there can never be, at least in WWE, a true off-season. It cannot happen. It is not practical. They have signed contracts, billion-dollar contracts, with NBC Universal, with Fox. Combined, it's almost $2.5 billion they just signed for the next 5 years, with the expectation of getting content 52 weeks a year. Live content at that. Now, there might be 1 week at the end of the year for New Year's and Christmas, where they'll tape the shows early. But by and large, you're looking at 51 or 52 weeks a year of live content. That's what they're contracted for. They didn't sign deals with WWE for them to say, hey, here's what we're going to do. When WrestleMania is over, we're going to take off in April and May, and we'll come back in June, And in the meantime, you can show old episodes of Raw's War from 98. Now, granted, a lot of those shows are probably a lot more exciting than the first run shows they would air, but what do you think Fox or USA would say to that? How do you think they would feel about that? That would be a breach of contract. That's what they would say. People forget about this. They think, oh, it's so simple. Why don't they just take 2 months off? Better yet, do it twice a year. You could take a month or two off after WrestleMania. You could do it again after Survivor Series. Nobody cares about that dead period around the holidays. In the lead up to the Royal Rumble, why not have two off seasons? Yeah, why not have a fucking pony? How about when I'm done recording here, I'll go to the local pony shop and I'll buy a fucking pony. I will ride my pony to WrestleMania to MetLife Stadium this Sunday. Sure, why not? There's about as much chance of that happening as there is an off-season in WWE. It's not practical. And what I've said, and a lot of you agree, I've said this for years. It makes far more sense to rotate talent in and out throughout the year on a schedule of mandatory leave. And look, that's not going to be an easy thing to coordinate. It's going to be tough. Whoever's responsible for that, you got to have a big chart and they have to sit here and really map this out. They have so much talent. I mean, in a way, it's good that they have as much talent as they do. They have more talent now under contract than ever before. But still, you know, look, it could impact if you have champions, if you have certain storylines that are ongoing at the moment. And one of the people in that storyline, hey, it's time for you to take 3 weeks off or 4 weeks off or 2 weeks or whatever it is. Yeah, it could wreak havoc. You've got a TV show to write. It could wreak havoc. It's not easy, but it's a lot more practical, a lot more doable than an offseason would be. It can be done. WWE had a response, by the way, to this segment. John Oliver is clearly a clever and humorous entertainer. However, the subject matter covered in his WWE segment is no laughing matter. Prior to airing, WWE responded to his producers, refuting every point in his one-sided presentation. John Oliver simply ignored the facts. The health and wellness of our performers is the single most important aspect of our business, and we have a comprehensive, long-standing talent wellness program. We invite John Oliver to attend WrestleMania this Sunday to learn more about our company. Now, Oliver's show tapes on Sunday evenings. Maybe he's not taping this weekend, but he probably is. They know this. The company knows that he tapes his show on Sundays and he can't make it. His show tapes in New York. I think it tapes at around 6:15 typically. It airs at like 11:30. But about 6:15 in the evening is when his show tapes. Even if he wanted to, there's no realistic way for him to get to WrestleMania unless he shows up late in the middle of the show. It's not happening, and they know this. So John Oliver is not going to WrestleMania. But the biggest thing that they covered, I think, on this show, and if ever there was going to be some kind of a change, it wouldn't be, it has less to do with off-season talk, it has more to do with this. And that is this discussion of employee versus independent contractor, this farce in WWE that has been going on for years now. Something else that I've talked about on this show many, many times before. I asked Bob Holly about it. When I had Bob Holly on the show a few years ago, 3 years ago, I had him on the podcast and he agreed. He says it's ridiculous how WWE classifies its talent as independent contractors right down to the time, you know, at that time he was talking about there being a dress code. I don't know that they have the same thing now. I think they might. But they were really strict for a while about a dress code. And guys were asking, well, when we're traveling, I mean, at the building, if we have to be wearing a suit or whatever, but like everywhere we go, and they were like, yep, you got to be wearing a suit and a tie. Right down to what the talent is supposed to wear? That's being an independent contractor? You don't tell an independent contractor what to wear. An independent contractor wears whatever the hell he or she wants to wear. Now, if you hired somebody to do work, and this is the example that Bob Holly was giving, because he was having somebody at the time in to remodel his bathrooms or something, and he said, look, I'm not going to have this person, tell this person, hey, when you come to my house, this is what you should be wearing. They would tell him to go fuck yourself, and they would go work somewhere else, and they would have every right to do so, because they're an independent contractor, and they can do that. You'd have the right not to pay that person, or not to work with them ever again, if you don't want to. But under normal circumstances, that's not the sort of thing you'd be able to dictate. And I brought up to him in that interview the year before, so this would have been 2015, there was a study that was published that used what the IRS calls its 20-factor test to determine whether or not someone meets the criteria for employment status. And they found that WWE met 16 of the 20 different points for its talent to be considered employees. And yet this persists, this independent contractor farce persists. Now, even though I've been talking about it, I'm sure other shows probably have been talking about this for years, John Oliver obviously has a much bigger platform and a bigger audience, a wider audience, to get this kind of stuff out there. And it's not just the issue of healthcare for wrestlers, which WWE mandates that they go out and buy their own healthcare or they won't let them work. And they have to pay for that themselves. Yeah, they cover the costs, and Oliver mentioned this. If they get hurt in the ring, major surgeries, the company will cover the cost for that. That's all well and good. But they still have to go out and get their own healthcare. Without it, they won't let them wrestle. That's not even the most ludicrous part. The most ludicrous part of this is how they can classify them as independent contractors but wield so much control over their lives. They're not allowed to work anywhere else. They're not even allowed to seek their own outside endorsements or endorsement deals, at least not without the company's approval, which to some extent I can understand. If, let's say, Roman Reigns went out and he did like a lot of these other podcasts do, and Roman Reigns is going to become the face of fucking Blue Chew and talk about dick pills, I can see where WWE might not like that. They have a certain image, maybe with somebody like Roman Reigns, they'd like to uphold with their audience, but still, they are very... very, very strict about just not allowing those sorts of things. I mean, we've heard stories of guys being turned down for something as simple as walking their friends out to the cage for an MMA fight on their day off. And they get told, no, you can't. You can't do that. Just the most trivial stuff that you can think of. When you sign that contract, it's like they own you. You become their property. Between that and the idea that these people are responsible outside of airfare for their own travel expenses on the road, I mean, that's their whole job is being on the road. And they have to pay for the rental cars, they've got to pay for the hotel, all that stuff is on them. That's why you hear about these guys, you know, carpooling together and stories from yesteryear about people, you know, four, five, six people to a hotel room, sometimes just to save money. They're independent contractors only when it's convenient for WWE to call them independent contractors. But they're treated like employees. They're just not afforded the same benefits of an actual employee who works backstage or who works out of Titan Tower. This new office space that they just bought for millions and millions and millions of dollars that they're moving into in 2 years, they bought that off the backs of each and every single one of these wrestlers. And yet they're not afforded the same benefits as the people who are going to be sitting inside of those buildings.
The Pet Cemetery brings things back.
Daddy.
Critics are calling Pet Cemetery brutally effective and disturbing. The Guardian. A hellish Frankenstein-like odyssey, says Total Film.
If you've done something, Lewis.
Bloody and chilling. Mirror Online.
It's not too late to undo it.
Yeah! 4 stars. Pet Cemetery, in cinemas now.
The most powerful stuff, I think, from this segment was talking about all the wrestlers who have, in the past, and continued to put up GoFundMes and look to crowdfunding from the fans to pay for their surgeries. They showed a clip of Jake the Snake from his Resurrection of Jake the Snake movie, which is great, and I encourage everybody to go see it. Him getting all emotional, you know, his arm is in a sling, he's sitting... It might have been a DDP's crib. He's sitting at the desk, and they're showing him on the laptop overnight, one night. They had a goal of whatever it was, 9,000 or 12,000 to raise money for shoulder surgery, and in one night they raised $7,000 from the fans to help pay for Jake's surgery. And he's sitting there going, well, I guess it really was worth it. I guess really all these years really did mean something. And it's a pretty emotional thing to watch, but you say to yourself, wait a minute, why does Jake the Snake or people on behalf of Jake the Snake have to go on the fucking internet to crowdfund money from you and me to pay for his surgery? That's pretty crazy. You know, that and the part with Roddy Piper in 2003, where Piper flat out says, look, I'm not going to make it to 65. I have a pension. Maybe it was from his work as an actor, but he's like, I have a pension. I can't get it out at 65. He goes, I'm not going to make it to 65. Let's just be realistic here. And then he didn't. He died at 61. Now, Oliver's point in this segment was, there's one audience that Vince McMahon sometimes listens to who can really make a difference, and he puts it back on us. And he says, it's the fans. The fans can really make a difference. Here's the deal. Real change here with this kind of stuff isn't going to come unless talent steps up. And I don't mean just like a mid-card rebellion. I mean a few top names have to step forward as well. Someone like a Roman Reigns or a John Cena, even just one of them is not enough. But it's got to be somebody on that level. Or two, three, four names like that on that level, with everybody else, of course, who steps forward. Now, the people like Reigns and Cena certainly do well for themselves with the system set up the way it is. Those guys have less of an incentive to want to change things because they already make a shitload of money. And that's exactly why it's so important to get at least some of them on board for something like this. Without them, nothing is going to change. Nothing might change even with them. But without them, it would at least force them to confront the issue and maybe make certain changes, even if it's just changes in the language of the talent contracts. Some kind of change is better than none. You know, it's like the question of, will the wrestlers ever form a union? Will there ever be a wrestler's union? I get questions in the mailbag sometimes asking that very same question. The answer is no. Absolutely not. It's been 30 years now, 40 years maybe, with this company. Where's this wrestler's union that everybody keeps fantasizing about? Where is it? I'm still waiting for it. There is none. Jim Ross once said, maybe this might have been when he was still the head of talent relations. He said, you know, you can't get 10 wrestlers in the same room to agree on what to have for lunch. You're going to get 100 of them to band together and form a union? You know, Jesse Ventura, the famous story of Jesse Ventura trying to rally the troops backstage in an event one night to try to come together and, you know, confront the company and form a union. And this was a few weeks before WrestleMania 2. He's in the locker room. He's given this big speech. Vince isn't there. And he's given this big speech. None of the agents are around. And then Hulk Hogan goes and stooges him off to Vince McMahon. The next day, Vince calls up Ventura and says, look, if you do that again, I'm going to fire your ass. So Jesse kept his mouth shut. He worked WrestleMania. And then he went off to film the movie Predator, which was his very first movie role. When he came back, as the story goes, and he's told this story, he told Vince, look, I'm not going to bring up the union stuff ever again. You don't have to worry about it. Because if these wrestlers are too stupid to fight for it themselves, you know what? They get what they deserve. And he never brought it up again. Jesse had his union. Once he filmed Predator, he got his SAG card. He's part of the Screen Actors Guild. So he got health care. He got a retirement plan. All he had to do was pay his annual dues, however much that is, a few $100 maybe a year. He pays his annual dues and he gets all of it. If the wrestlers don't want to fight for something similar, that's on them. It wasn't until a few years later, there was a legal deposition, I think for a separate lawsuit. And I think Jesse's lawyer is interviewing Vince as part of this deposition. And Jesse says to him, look, while you're in there with him, why don't you ask him about who ratted me out on the union stuff? He was curious because up to that point, Jesse didn't know that it was Hogan who ratted him out. So the lawyer asked Vince, and Vince, you know, he's under oath, and Vince says, yeah, it was Hulk Hogan. I found out from Hulk Hogan. Now imagine if Hogan or somebody at his level had stood with the talent banded together with them back in 86. How different things might just be today. Again, Hogan had no incentive to because he was the top guy. He was already making great money. But imagine if he had stood shoulder to shoulder and they actually got a lot of that roster together back then. How different things might be today, we'll never know. Today they have so many wrestlers, he could fire half the damn roster and just replace them and still have guys left over. But back then, he wouldn't have had that luxury. He would have been stuck. His back would have been up against the wall. He would have had to make some kind of a decision. And that's really the key. They have to want to do it themselves to make this happen. It's not enough for the fans to bring signs to the stadium. He's telling people to bring signs to WrestleMania. There's going to be 80,000 fucking people in this stadium. Do you think that there's going to be a sea of signs talking about, you know, make wrestlers employees? I mean, come on. It's just, it's not realistic. It's stupid. The fans don't care about this. I'm sorry to say. I don't mean you and me. I'm talking the fans at large. They don't care about this. They don't. Sounds cold, but they don't care. It doesn't affect them directly. It doesn't affect what they see on the show every single week. They're not going to fight for it the way that they did to get Daniel Bryan into the main event of WrestleMania. This is not our fight. This has to be their fight. It was Meltzer mentioned an interesting stat. Of all the major sports leagues, NFL, NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, they pay their wrestlers between 47 and 51% of total revenue for the league, for each league. UFC, a little bit closer to 14%. WWE, way down at the bottom, right around 8% of total revenue. It's no wonder they have so much money. They get to keep a far bigger piece of the pie. But it's also, I think, important to note, this is not just a WWE issue. WWE is a billion-dollar company. So is Sinclair Broadcast Group, which owns Ring of Honor. You know, Shahid Khan, who's backing All Elite Wrestling, has a net worth of $7 billion. Now, we don't know all the details about how AEW is going to operate. We'll find out in time. You know, I get the sense they want to be more talent-friendly, and that's great, but we just don't have all the details yet. The big difference also, I think, with them and Ring of Honor as compared to WWE is that there are a lot of guys who are able to work elsewhere. Some of them are exclusive and they can only wrestle for Ring of Honor or only wrestle for AEW. You know, but a lot of them, they can work elsewhere. They can make, you know, make independent shots. And even somebody like a Jericho, who's an AEW contracted performer, has said that he has permission to go work out his own deal with New Japan Pro Wrestling. Kenny Omega, same thing. Guys lower down on the card, they can probably go book local shows and independent dates if that's how they supplement their income. That's not something that WWE talent is allowed to do. That's probably the biggest difference between WWE and these other promotions when it comes to this stuff. They have you, I mean, they got you in the iron claw, man. You're not going anywhere. You are under an exclusive talent contract with WWE, and unless they have a working relationship with a promotion like Evolve, you know, Gabe Sapolsky's company, and they send guys there occasionally to work, that's about it. That's about as good as it's going to get. So that's the big difference there. But there's no reason for them not to, you know, these multi-billion dollar entities and these multi-billionaires, there's no reason for them not to treat their talent the way that they would treat any other employee and afford them the same benefits they would any of their employees wearing a suit. Whether you're wearing spandex or suit jackets, it should not make a difference. But they're not going to change out of the goodness of their heart. The talent has to want to see change. That's what it boils down to. They need to band together and do something about it. Otherwise, this all just falls on deaf ears. Some big signing news this week. In the worst-kept secret in wrestling, Jim Ross has inked a three-year deal with All Elite Wrestling as a senior advisor in what the company is calling the most lucrative deal in pro wrestling commentary history. They say commentary history, although it's not clear how much commentary he'll actually be doing. It sounds like Alex Marvez and Excalibur are going to be the primary announced team for AEW. Ross is going to be at Double or Nothing. We just don't know if it'll be a three-man booth, if he's going to be announcing the entire show, if he's only going to be calling one match or some matches, or maybe just making an in-ring appearance. Actually, they call it an in-ring appearance in their press release. He's making an in-ring appearance in Vegas at Double or Nothing. Maybe he's wrestling. Who knows? What a swerve, right? What a swerve that would be if Jim Ross is wrestling. He's on the talent roster for AEW. But it does sound like he's going to be doing a lot of work behind the scenes for them as well and advising young talents. And I think he can be very useful, especially behind the scenes, when it comes to whether it's from a talent relations perspective or just sort of overseeing the way that they do certain operations, the way he used to do it for WWE, things that worked, things that didn't work. I think he could be kind of educational in that way. And then there's the announcing aspect of it. You know, he sounded tired when it came to a lot of the New Japan stuff. And it got to a point where when I heard he was parting ways with New Japan, I was happy because I just didn't feel like he was the right guy for that job anymore. I think there were other people more capable and more up on the product who do a very good job, and it just didn't seem like a good fit. Here in the video they put out, The Road to Double or Nothing, they interviewed him at his house. He sounds more motivated. He sounds really excited. And so to see him back on TV for some big matches, maybe on some of the big shows, I think it adds a lot of credibility. I think it really does help the product out right out of the gate with a lot of fans who, names like Chris Jericho and Jim Ross are going to mean something to some of these fans you want to bring in. You know, you have this great young roster of talent, but it has to be supplemented, I think, by some big names. Kenny Omega is a big name, obviously. The Young Bucks, to a lot of the hardcores, have a big profile. But having guys like a Jim Ross and a Chris Jericho is going to be, I think, a big difference maker for them. So it's a smart hire, and I think he could be helpful in a lot of different ways for them. And it's kind of cool to hear him talk about it, how excited he really sounds. Former WWE ring announcer Justin Roberts has signed on to be the official ring announcer for AEW. I think that's a great pickup for them. Justin's a good dude. I've had him on the show before, as I have JR. I've had them both on the podcast before. And to listen to them speak about their experiences and listen to them speak about the business, it's very clear that they are passionate about it. Justin Roberts, in a lot of ways, had a lot of that passion beaten out of him by all those years in WWE. You know, some of those stories will make you angry when you read his book, or if you, you know, use our link or whatever on Audible to get his book, Best Seat in the House. It's a great book, and he really goes into some horrible details in some cases of some of the more ridiculous experiences that he had working for that company and the handcuffs that were on him as far as what he was able to do and not do. And so I think that's a great pickup for them. Alicia Atout, who did backstage interviews at All In and worked for Impact until recently, the two sides parted ways. She is going to be working for them as a backstage interviewer. She's also very good. So some good pickups here, some good signings. And speaking of signings, Rob Van Dam has signed as well with Impact Wrestling. This is according to PW Insider. He returns tonight. As I am recording this, I'm recording on a Thursday. He is going to be part of the company's United We Stand show tonight at 11 p.m., which was already announced last month. He was coming in for a one-shot. He's teaming with Sabu against Pentagon and Phoenix. But he has signed with them apparently now moving forward. He'll be at all TVs and pay-per-views for Impact starting Monday the 29th with their taping up in Toronto. You know, RVD is another one. I've had him on the podcast before too. He sounded like he was standing on the runway directing air traffic, but I was still happy to have him on. My only regret from that interview with RVD, besides the audio quality, is the chance that I didn't have time at the very end. I wanted to ask him some questions about his obsession with the Mafia. He is like a huge Mafia nut, and he's up on Mafia history, and he reads about it, and he really is. He's obsessed with it. And I wanted to ask him some questions about that. Maybe one day we'll be able to have a round two, and we could talk about that. But RVD is 48 years old, and this is not the same Rob Van Dam that he was when he was last in TNA, which was about probably 9 or 10 years ago now. He was a guy, he's always been a guy known for his flashy moveset, and the way he moves around the ring. You know, now the question is he a genetic freak who can still pull off all the things he used to do? I guess we'll find out. You know, he's got a new documentary out called Headstrong. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. I know it's on iTunes and Google Play, and I think Amazon Prime Video, if you want to buy it. But it was supposed to be a film about a comedy tour. He was starting to get into stand-up comedy, and was going on a tour. And this was going to be a documentary following him as he prepared for and went on this tour. and it turned into something very different about brain injuries and such, because he, when they started filming, he was still suffering the after effects of a really bad concussion that he had suffered. And so they just sort of chronicled that, and it turned into, I take it, a more serious documentary. I haven't seen it yet, but it sounds pretty good.
What did we just see? What did we just see? It's WrestleMania, baby!
Top 10 most shocking WrestleMania match outcomes. It all comes down to this. After 10 weeks, what is the number one most shocking WrestleMania match outcome of the last 34 years? To me, this one is a no-brainer. It's the easiest choice of all the ones I had to pick on this list. I was fortunate enough to be there live for it, and it was one of the most surreal things that I've ever seen. It's Brock Lesnar, his third appearance in this countdown, conquering The Undertaker's 21-0 undefeated streak at WrestleMania 30. Undertaker, over the years, had taken care of many an opponent at WrestleMania, going all the way back to Jimmy Snuka. He dispatched him and Jake Roberts and Giant Gonzalez by DQ and King Kong Bundy, Diesel, Sid, Kane, all the other countless names that came after it. Shawn Michaels twice, Triple H three times, CM Punk. And here at WrestleMania 30, the streak came to an end, but it could have come to an end a lot earlier than it did. Especially if The Undertaker is healthy, and if Stone Cold is healthy, maybe they would have had a match at WrestleMania 16 back in 2000. You know, Undertaker also missed WrestleMania 10. I don't know who the obvious opponent would have been for him on that show, but certainly WrestleMania 2000. I could envision a match between Austin and The Undertaker. Maybe we would have gotten a triple threat with Austin, Rock, and Triple H, and then Undertaker would have wrestled someone else, but he could very well have lost on that show. Yeah, 19 years ago, the streak could have come to an end. Those are the only two WrestleMania shows up to this point that he has missed. You look at somebody like Diesel. You know, when he wrestled Diesel in 96 at WrestleMania 12, what if Diesel hadn't already announced that he was leaving to go to WCW? He told Vince in early March he was on his way out. Vince already knew. So there was no chance that Diesel was going to beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania. But what if he never did make that announcement? Would Diesel have beaten The Undertaker? I think there's a pretty damn good chance that that's exactly what would have happened. You know, even though Diesel was on his way out, he got the championship match anyway against Shawn Michaels the following month because they wanted Shawn Michaels to get a big win in a no-holds-barred type brawl to show that he's not just some flashy wrestler. He can throw down with the big boys in that company. So they had Diesel put him over on the way out, which I'm sure Diesel had no problem doing because the two of them were best friends. Made sense. But storyline-wise, it would have made more sense for Diesel to beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania and then get a championship match the following month at In Your House. So it's fun to kind of look back on little things like that and say, if this was a little bit different, or if Diesel didn't make this announcement, would he have beaten the streak? I mean, well, there really wasn't much of a streak back then, but he could have cut the legs off right there before it ever got going. And it is kind of fun to look back on that, I think, and wonder what might have been. Randy Orton, there were plenty of rumors in 2005 that Randy Orton, who was doing the Legend Killer gimmick at the time, and he was being positioned for greatness in this company, that Randy Orton was going to beat The Undertaker. He was going to be the first man ever at WrestleMania to beat The Undertaker. Didn't work out that way. Ultimately, Vince decided not to do that. But there were lots of rumors at the time that it was definitely on the table. So there's been lots of close calls. Even Giant Gonzalez, for crying out loud, that was his first big match in the company. They could have easily had Giant Gonzalez go over on The Undertaker there. I mean, look, Undertaker lost clean. He jobbed clean to Vladimir fucking Kozlov on SmackDown when they were trying to make Kozlov into a big deal before that flopped. It's not out of the realm of possibility that there was some serious discussion about having Gonzalez get a big win over The Undertaker and then build to a rematch at SummerSlam, which they did anyway. So anyway, the streak was still intact. up to this point. And the streak had been marketed as a very big deal. It was very smart for them to start drawing attention to it. It turned into a great marketing vehicle. It became an attraction every single year at WrestleMania. And there was another fun story that I almost forgot about, but when I was thinking about the history with Brock and Undertaker, I remembered this story. And here's another example of a time when the streak probably wasn't in much jeopardy, but boy, this would have been wild if they would have been able to pull this off. If you remember, Undertaker attended UFC 121. When Brock Lesnar was fighting, he was the UFC heavyweight champion. He had long been out of WWE. And Dana White had invited The Undertaker, or had given him tickets, to come to the UFC show. He was a big fight fan. Undertaker really was one of the early guys in that company who started, and I'm not talking, you know, obviously Ken Shamrock did this many years before, but Undertaker adapted his style and started to incorporate more sort of elements of MMA, and he started wearing the gloves, and, you know, he had the go-go plata as his submission hold. So clearly he was a fight fan. He's at UFC 121, and Brock Lesnar gets smashed by Cain Velasquez. Cain Velasquez beats him to become the new heavyweight champion. The same Cain Velasquez, by the way, who's making his pro wrestling debut for AAA at Triple Mania 27 this August. Hey, maybe they'll swing it and they'll have him at the Madison Square Garden show they just announced, September 15th. You never know. They're going to need attractions on that show. Although it might make more sense for them to partner with All Elite for that Garden show. But anyway, so the fight's over. Brock lost. And Undertaker is being interviewed by Ariel Helwani. Ariel Helwani is a big wrestling fan, so obviously he's excited to talk to The Undertaker. Undertaker's attention is kind of half on Helwani and half on something else going on. He's watching Brock as Brock is leaving the cage. Clearly, that's what he's watching. And he's waiting, because Brock is going to be walking right next to where he is. And as Brock goes walking by, he and Undertaker make eye contact, and Undertaker just goes, "You want to do it?" And Brock stares at him and just keeps walking. And Brock was, I mean, the lights were on, but nobody was home. I mean, he was probably half out walking to the back. And Helwani goes, "What was that about?" And Undertaker goes, "Yeah, it's a personal thing, you know. Just a personal thing." He wouldn't talk about exactly what was so personal about it. And it was probably just because he was trying to work an angle and trying to build to something at WrestleMania the following year. That was WrestleMania 27. Well, as the story goes, and we've heard Dana White has told the story before, there was this hope on an expectation on WWE's end that they could convince Brock Lesnar to come back at least for one match in the company at WrestleMania to lose to The Undertaker. Brock and Undertaker had worked together many years earlier. There was a mutual respect there. And look, maybe there was some underlying heat for the way that Brock left the company for all the years and the effort they put into promoting this guy and making him one of their biggest stars. He just up and leaves. You know, I wouldn't doubt that there was maybe some residual heat there. But I think this was just a case of Undertaker playing up the whole, you know, personal issue angle. But they thought they could make a deal. Brock apparently was interested. They were going to pay him to come in and probably do the job and lose to The Undertaker at WrestleMania 27 in Atlanta. Well, when Dana White got wind of this, he said, "No, no, no. You're under contract to the UFC," and he wouldn't let the match happen. There were conversations between Vince McMahon and Dana White, who, as best as I can tell to this day, are still on pretty decent terms with each other. I know Dana likes Vince a lot, respects him, and there's a lot of similarities between them and the way they run their companies. But they met, they had a conversation, and the idea was that, look, we want to use Brock, and Brock would lose to The Undertaker, and almost like in exchange, why don't we do a match at WrestleMania between you and me? A match between Vince McMahon and Dana White, with Dana beating Vince. And Dana shot that idea down, and Vince was also willing to go to UFC and fight him in the octagon. He was willing to have a shoot fight with Dana White and let him beat him up. And Dana shot that idea down as well. He shot both ideas down, and the match never happened, and instead it was Undertaker against Triple H, and obviously they went on to have two WrestleMania matches against each other the next 2 years. But Dana rejected the ideas, and he even said, he goes, you know, Vince McMahon is a fucking maniac. He likes him, but he's a fucking maniac, which is 100% true. Dana White speaks the truth on that. But that would have been one hell of a doubleheader for WrestleMania that year. I'll say this much. It would have been a bigger deal than John Cena against The Miz. You do Undertaker against Brock coming right out of UFC, and then you do Vince McMahon against Dana White. It probably would have been awful. It would have been pretty one-sided. I mean, obviously Dana's a lot younger than Vince. But that would have been a hell of a doubleheader for WrestleMania that year. Fast forward 3 years. Brock's already back in WWE. He has no opponent going into WrestleMania 30. He and Paul Heyman have issued an open challenge, an open contract for anybody who wants to sign on to face the Beast at WrestleMania. Who comes out to accept? The Undertaker. It's a very basic, kind of uneventful build, really, to this match. Undertaker just shows up and signs the contract, and that was really the build-up for this match. Now, at WrestleMania, as part of his entrance, Undertaker, they have caskets all across the stage for each of his WrestleMania victims. And he's got one open casket waiting for Brock Lesnar. So these two come out for this match. It's the Superdome in New Orleans, WrestleMania 30. One of the best WrestleMania shows, I think, top to bottom that they've ever done. It was actually a really good show up until this point. And the match died a death. And the match died a death for two reasons. Number one, no one believed, and I say no one, I mean obviously some people might have, but the vast majority of people in the building that night didn't think there was any chance that Brock Lesnar was breaking the streak. Brock Lesnar, in their mind, was not going to win, and it was already a foregone conclusion. We already knew Brock Lesnar was not going to win. And number two, somewhere in here, early in the match, and I think I know where, I went back and I was kind of skimming the beginning parts of the match to see if I could pick up on which spot it was. There was a single leg takedown, very awkward, kind of clumsy single leg takedown on the outside where Brock took Taker down, and it looked like he bashed his head on the ground. I'm pretty sure that's where Undertaker suffered the concussion. He got a really wicked concussion in this match, and had to wrestle the rest of the match like that. It was pretty severe. And I think it was on that single leg takedown spot. And so the Undertaker wrestled the rest of the match concussed, where Brock had to try to lead, and it was very slow, and it was very plodding, and he took a lot of abuse, and it just was a boring, just devastatingly boring, dull, slow match. And even when Undertaker would go on the offense, I think at one point he countered a corner. You know, Brock was doing punches in the corner and he gave him a last ride. He kind of dropped him. Like, it was just very, it was sad. It was sad to watch. And my sense is that it had more to do with the injury than Undertaker just being old. So I'll cut him a little bit of slack, obviously, because he got hurt. But it just looked bad. I mean, whoever's fault it wasn't anybody's fault. Shit happens. It's just a bad match. And so, you know, there's no real drama because people already figure the outcome is preordained. Plus, it's just such a boring match. It made for a very quiet crowd that didn't buy into the near falls and really just didn't care until we got to the end. Now, Lesnar had hit two F5s. Undertaker kicked out both times because, of course, he did. And the finishing sequence, we have Brock countering a tombstone attempt into another F5. This was the third F5, and he planted the Undertaker. Now, I remember being in the crowd when he hit the F5, because I thought Undertaker was just going to counter it. They were going to counter into a counter into a counter, and ultimately Undertaker would win. Maybe it would take another tombstone, because he had already hit one. When he hit the third F5, just clean, laid him out with it right in the middle, before he even went for the cover, I thought to myself, wait a minute, that might be it. Three F5s. Of course, I feel silly saying that now because last year he hit Roman Reigns with about 60 of them. But there was something about hitting the third F5 where I just thought to myself, I don't know that he's kicking. I don't think I honestly believed that he was going to win with it, but part of me did think, holy shit, like, wait a minute. And I kind of perked up, but I didn't really expect it to happen. And he goes over and he covers the Undertaker. and he pins him. Now, we had good seats, but it wasn't like we were close to the ring. I mean, we were on the hard camera side, but pretty, I would say, if I had to say how many rows back, we were probably about, I don't know, 15, 20 rows back, probably. So we had like a dead center view, but it was hard to see exactly what was going on. My first thought was the ref botched the count. Holy shit, he fucked up. And I thought that there was a botch, especially because they didn't play any music. I think the bell rang. I honestly don't remember. I was kind of in a fog. Some people have said that in the DVD and on the network, they added in the ring bell sound. I'm pretty sure they rang the bell, but nobody knew what was going on. And I couldn't really see, and I'm like, oh God, they just botched the finish. This is the worst possible thing that could have happened. It was just mass confusion and shock over what had just happened. You know, the referee, here's the thing about the referee. They didn't even clue the referee in on the finish. They tell the refs, you know, call things like a shoot. So when you're calling a match, if someone's shoulders are up, you don't count unless the shoulders are down. If somebody fucks up and they don't get their shoulder up in time, you count three. That's what they're instructed to do. And so he was just told, just call it, you know, and nobody told Chad Patton in advance that, hey, Brock's going over here in this match. So imagine if you're Chad Patton in this situation and you count the three, and now there's just mass confusion. What must have been going through this guy's head when his hand hit that mat for the count of three? It's a good thing he was wearing black pants that night. And Michael Cole, by the way, Michael Cole has had some good calls over the years. He's had some lame ones. Here, this is probably the most anticlimactic call ever for something as big as the streak ending. Literally, as Brock gets the three count, he goes, "The streak is over." And that's it. And I like how they had the announcers lay out, because really, what is there to be said? I don't know, I just felt kind of anticlimactic to me. But anyway, you've all seen the reactions of the people in the audience. Those were genuine reactions from people who, I mean, now I think people kind of, they might make silly faces expecting that they'll be on camera and they'll be the next guy with the big bug eyes, like the guy at WrestleMania when his eyes were practically bugging out of his head. What was his name? Ellis, I think his name is. That iconic shot, just pure shock. Shock and awe amongst the people in the crowd in my section and all over the dome, all over the Superdome. When that referee counted three. A lot of very unhappy people, but it was largely just a reaction of shock and also, what the hell just happened? Did they fuck up? That was really the dominant reaction when this was over. And there's also a point, if you go back and watch, when they're showing all of the people's faces and the crowd reactions, Heyman is on the ground with Brock, and you hear almost like a disturbance in the crowd, where the crowd noise kind of raises there for a few seconds. I had some people ask me after the show, what was going on? Like, what was that all about? Because they didn't show it on TV. What had happened is that was the exact moment they put the graphic up on the screen that said 21-1. So for all the confused faces in the crowd, it wasn't until they put that graphic up on the screen, and that's what they were reacting to, that's when they realized this is real. Holy shit, this is real and this is planned, and they had that graphic ready and waiting, and this is really happening. And then the boos, of course, rained down. There were chants of bullshit. A lot of very upset people, myself included. I mean, it's kind of weird because when they showed, like, Justin Roberts, right before Justin Roberts announces Brock as the winner, and he thought it was a mistake too, by the way. He said his stomach sank when he watched the referee count three, because normally he gets a cue right away to go ahead and make an announcement. And in this case, they didn't give him a cue. It was like 60 seconds. So he thought they're scrambling to figure out what to do, that they botched the finish, and it just, he couldn't believe it. That was his reaction. But if you go back and watch, right before he makes the announcement of who won the match and they're still showing crowd shots, if you look, they caught me on camera. I have no idea. It wasn't like I was ringside. They caught me, 75,000 people in this building. And there I am, like, the lower right-hand corner of the screen. And while everybody else has this, like, dumb, shocked look on their face, I'm laughing. There were people like, why are you laughing? I was laughing because I just witnessed the streak being killed off, and because of how fucking stupid I thought it was. That's why I'm laughing. You know, part of what really pissed people off, I think, is who ended it. As much as the fact that it ended, it was who they handpicked to end the streak. Here's Brock Lesnar, a guy who didn't need that kind of rub. He already had legitimacy coming from the world that he came from. He definitely benefited from it. They had no choice, really, after what they did here, other than to build this guy up as an unstoppable force, and that's what they did. They made the most of it, but he didn't need it. Here's a guy who's a part-time prince in this company. They sacrificed the streak for a part-time performer, and that irritated a lot of people. Paul Heyman, I have to say this, Paul Heyman deserves some kind of award for his performance here. I can never vote against Bobby Heenan as being the greatest manager in wrestling history, but Paul Heyman is a close second. Absolutely a close second. He was fantastic here. So they leave. Undertaker is left alone in the ring. People don't know how to react. I think Undertaker was even, he was concussed, but he was also stalling a little bit because it seemed like he was waiting for that big standing ovation where everybody just kind of rises to their feet and gives him this standing applause out of respect. And it didn't really happen. He really had to wait and they had to milk it. And, you know, people gave him polite applause as he left, but I really do think they were just, you know, it was like they didn't know what to make of what they had just witnessed. It was a legitimately shocking moment. There's a reason why I put this at number one on my list. Some people are going to say, oh, it should have been Austin going heel, or it should have been this, or it should have been that. You don't understand how legitimately shocking this was for the people in the building, and not just in the building. I mean, there's plenty of reaction videos online. Every now and then I'll have some fun. I'll go on YouTube and I'll type in WrestleMania 30 or, you know, Undertaker streak broken reaction video. And it's hard sometimes to tell apart the ones that are legit from the ones that are just manufactured. So you kind of look at the dates on the videos and you can see the ones that were posted that night. And it's fun to watch people's reaction and how absolutely beside themselves they get when they see what happened here. I cannot think of any other wrestling match that I've ever seen where the reaction and people's expressions have been what they were here in this match. Even Montreal. Montreal was more anger and just confusion. And I think people kind of had an idea of what they had just seen. But this was just something on a whole other level. I mean, I guess the closest thing to compare it to, and I didn't live through this and I wasn't there for it live, but I guess maybe the closest comparison for the people who were there would have been Madison Square Garden when Bruno lost the title to Ivan Koloff. I mean, I remember reading about that and they said you could hear a pin drop. People could not believe it. It was stunning. And this was sort of a more modern day equivalent to that on a much grander scale, obviously. When Undertaker got backstage, he collapsed, and that was not a work. That was not part of the legend and the urban myth. He went backstage, and he collapsed. And they had to call medics over, and they put him in an ambulance, and Vince McMahon left with the Undertaker. He got into the ambulance, and he went to the hospital with the Undertaker in the ambulance. He rode in the ambulance with him. He was not there. Vince was not there at the end for Daniel Bryan's big crowning moment in the main event. He missed the whole thing because he was at the hospital with The Undertaker. My thoughts on the streak ending are very simple, and I've made this clear over the years. I mean, I think they made the most of it with Brock, which they kind of had to. The streak never should have ended. And there's people who are going to fight me on this who have the complete opposite view. What a waste it would be not to give somebody else the rub. If Undertaker knows he's done, and he was, let's say, going to wrestle his retirement match, you kill the streak. You got to use that gimmick and use that streak to get somebody else over. I understand that viewpoint, but in this case, I disagree. I think the streak, he should have retired with it. He'll probably never retire. I mean, he'll probably die before he retires, but he should have taken that streak to his grave. He should have taken that streak to his Hall of Fame induction. I think it was a huge mistake in the grand scheme of things to end the streak. There's a lot of wrestlers who feel very passionately the same way that I do. Here's what I think about The Undertaker. He should have stepped away after that end of an era match with Triple H at WrestleMania 28. That was the time for him to step away. 20-0, big Hell in a Cell win. big photo op at the end there on the stage with him and Shawn and Triple H kind of looking out into the crowd. It really did feel in that moment like the end of some kind of era, even though it turned out really not to be, because every single one of those three guys continued to wrestle. In Shawn's case, it's only been one match, but still, they all went on to wrestle. But I think that would have been the best way for him to go out. And I know him and CM Punk ended up having a really good match the following year at WrestleMania 29, but that would have, in my opinion, been the best exit for him. And surely, after that horrible match he had with Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 33, where he took off his gear, his gloves, his hat, and just kind of laid it in the ring and left it there, that would have been the next best way, given that he came back. That would have been the next best way for him to go out, where he leaves his stuff in the ring, he disappears, he vanishes, as he did, into a plume of smoke with the gongs going off. That would have been the next best way for him to go out. And he was back the very next year, like nothing ever happened, for a 3-minute match against John Cena. And everybody said, oh, The Undertaker looks great. He looks better than he did last year. Look at this. He's doing old school, and man, he looks good. It's a 3-minute match. The guy probably hadn't wrestled in a year. He wrestled 3 minutes. People use that to justify as though the guy is not years past his expiration date. And I don't say that to be disrespectful. People get they get very burned and angry when I make comments like that about The Undertaker, like I'm doing some great disservice to the man. I say these things because it's kind of sad to watch The Undertaker a lot of times when you, I mean, forget the crown jewel stuff. My God, you talk about embarrassing. That whole match was embarrassing. Triple H getting hurt didn't help, but even without the injury, I think that match would have been embarrassing. People like me don't want to see The Undertaker like that. Guy wants to wrestle, he wants to make his money. Hey, by all means, go ahead. Go make your money. Do your thing. As a fan, I think it just is sad to continue to watch him come out and wrestle when he doesn't have any business being in the ring, I think, having these big matches like he's so used to having. So the John Cena match was 3 minutes. I mean, is that what we're going to get from now on? He'll just come out, have the obligatory 2-minute match, and then leave? Okay, I mean, I guess that's one way to protect the guy. But a lot of people had these visions in their head of what it would be like to watch The Undertaker just sort of fade out into the darkness. And, you know, all those things have been shattered. He just keeps coming back. I've given up trying to guess when The Undertaker is going to retire. I don't think he'll ever formally retire. I don't think it's ever going to happen. I don't know what a proper exit looks like anymore for The Undertaker, because they've already done it. That whole idea with him disappearing off into the smoke, I said that years ago, and they did it, and he came back anyway. So I don't know what a proper exit looks like anymore for this guy, because they've blown it so many times, and he is a shell of what he used to be. I don't even know that that perfect exit exists anymore for him. And I think as long as those Saudi Arabia paydays are around, and we've got 9 more years of that deal with WWE and the Saudis, I think Undertaker will continue to be around. Those Saudi shows are bigger now than WrestleMania, especially the paydays. He's not dumb. He knows that. He may not be at WrestleMania this weekend, but he'll be on that Saudi show in June. You bet your ass he will be. You know, Jim Ross claimed that Brock did not want to break the streak. Jim Ross said that Brock Lesnar, out of respect for The Undertaker, did not want to break the streak. He actually asked to lose that match, but Vince McMahon had made up his mind, and he turned him down. Vince saw the physical condition that The Undertaker was in. He made a judgment call. It wasn't what Undertaker wanted either. They went back and forth on this, but it was Vince's call to make, and Undertaker said okay. Vince thought this is probably going to be it for it. Little did he know, but he thought this was going to be it for The Undertaker, and if that was the case, he had to lose. The streak had to end. Shawn Michaels claimed that he was supposed to come to the ring later on that night for this parade of former champions to come out and celebrate with Daniel Bryan after his big win, but he left early. He left the building. He was so upset over what had happened. And Stone Cold was in the truck with Kevin Dunn drinking a beer. He saw it. He couldn't believe it. He was pissed about it. But Shawn said, yeah, I left early. I didn't come out because I wasn't there. I left early. And think about that. Like, he lost twice to The Undertaker at WrestleMania. He's probably thinking, man, if I knew that this guy was going to break the streak, it should have been me. I lost twice. I jobbed to this guy twice at WrestleMania. He was probably more upset about that than anything else. But he said he saw the crowd reaction. He saw how dead the crowd just died. And he was just upset about the whole thing. And he decided to duck out early. Now, Vince was on the Stone Cold podcast later that same year in 2014. Austin asked him about this. And Vince's response was that, look, nobody wants to give back more to this business than Mark Calloway. Nobody wants to give more to this business than The Undertaker. And there comes a time when it's time to do that. So he felt that it was the right time. And then Austin was like, come on, dude. You can't tell me that Undertaker made that decision. And then Vince admitted, no, I made the decision. I like how Austin pressed him on it. He made it sound like, oh, it was Undertaker's choice. It wasn't. And Austin called him out on that, and Vince said, no, it was my choice. I made the call. He says, sometimes you got to make the difficult decisions, and I think I made the right call at the right time. Looking back on it now, given that Undertaker came back anyway, I think it was the wrong call at the wrong time. Now, as far as what happened post-WrestleMania with Lesnar, he went on a tear. He went on, he was going to demolish Daniel Bryan to win the championship at SummerSlam. Bryan got hurt, so instead that spot went to John Cena. Brock beat the fuck out of him, won the championship, and just went on this monster run with the title. Undertaker was gone for a year. He came back and wrestled Bray Wyatt the following year when it should have been Sting. If he was going to come back, that was the match to do. And then Undertaker and Lesnar resumed their rivalry later on in the summer of 2015. This was when Undertaker showed up unannounced, kicked Lesnar in the dick, the same way Seth Rollins did to Brock on Monday. And they had two good matches. They had one at SummerSlam. They had another one at Hell in a Cell. It's too bad they couldn't have the same one here at WrestleMania. But the match is just completely overshadowed by the outcome, which is the most shocking match outcome in WrestleMania history. It's one of those legendary moments I feel like you don't forget where you were when it happened. Whether you were watching on TV or at a bar or you were in the building, if you were backstage. You'll always remember what your reaction was and where you were when you watched that live. And that WrestleMania that year really had it all. I really think that's one of the better top-to-bottom Mania shows that they've ever done. And the streak ending is a very big part of that. As far as it being a very historic show, you won't find too many moments more historic than that one. So ends our WrestleMania countdown. I've had a lot of fun doing it. I'm sure we'll do another countdown at some point down the road. I'm going to take a little break from that for a while, and hopefully we'll get back into a normal rhythm with the next show. Not this Sunday, but next Sunday. That'll be episode 594, since any reviews I do for TakeOver and MSG, that'll probably just go up on YouTube. If I do push the WrestleMania review out Monday, I guess maybe that'll be 594. We'll see. But we'll get back into a more normal groove, and we'll start taking mailbag questions again. Follow me on Twitter throughout the weekend, at Solomonster, especially if you're coming to the meetup. If there's any kind of, if I'm delayed getting there, or there's any change or anything like that, I'll just post messages on there. And I'll be live tweeting during all of these shows. I'm going to be at TakeOver. I'm going to be at the MSG show. I'll be doing some work at the House of Glory show earlier that day. I'm going right from there into the city for the MSG show. And then, of course, WrestleMania on Sunday. I'll be at Raw Monday night. I'm not going to SmackDown. That's just, I've hit my wall on Monday. That's my limit of what I can tolerate. So there's a lot of big events coming up. There's going to be a lot going on. There'll be more audio coming your way on YouTube. So please sub to the channel. That's where a lot of the content these next few days is going to be going up, and I will hopefully see you all at the King's Beer Hall tomorrow, Friday, 2 p.m. I look forward to meeting many of you there. Until next time, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a very fun WrestleMania weekend wherever you may be, and I will see you back here in the next couple of days. Take care, guys.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Harlem Heat 2000, Techno Team 2000, LOD 2000, WrestleMania 2000, anything as a rule of thumb with 2000 in the name, you know it sucked.
The Salamonster Sounds Off, available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and coming soon, Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesalamonster for Sound Off extras and more. And follow the Salamonster on Twitter @Salamonster.
Salamonster.
Salamonster.
Put that cigarette out.
Salamonster Sounds Off.